And so I'm offering this simple phrase to kids from 1 to 92.
I'm 93. Do I still count?
No, Grandpa, we hate you.
Just so you know, that gag was based off a comic I made back in 2014. So I wanted to make a Christmas video, but I didn't know what to talk about, so we're just gonna sit here and roast marshmallows by this PNG of a fire. Do you guys know about that soccer game that happened in the middle of World War I on Christmas Day? And it was between two opposing sides, the Allies and the Central Powers? I'm not making this up. So German and British troops were in the trenches, you know, fighting for their lives. They were in the middle of a war, after all. And on Christmas Eve, German troops started singing Christmas carols. Then the British troops responded singing their own Christmas carols. Then one thing led to another, and on Christmas Day, they started playing soccer. Well, the British troops would have called it football, and the German troops would have called it football. But I'm calling it soccer. Yeah, I know I'm a heretic. I don't think anything like that has happened in a war ever. Except for that one time in the Revolutionary War when everyone stopped fighting because the new Super Smash Brothers just came out. Merry feet! Merry feet! Tis not Falco! Wamba with combination!
Oh! Oh!
Where art thou? Okay, that was obviously a joke. Maybe they didn't come out for at least, like, another year. Stupid. Anyway, what I'm wondering is, do you think anyone during that game felt a little bit awkward? So, how's the war? Oh, you're fearing for your life? Well, that's good. That's good. That means we're doing a good job. Do you think whoever won the game of soccer bragged to the other team?
Ha ha! Yes! First we beat you at football, next, the world.
Ah, dang it, my marshmallow burned. Does the story of Rudolph count as a fable? What would the moral of Rudolph be? I think it would be, being different from society will be punished unless it's exploitable. Okay, I stole that quote from something I saw on the subreddit, I'm 14 and this is deep. How come no one sings any songs about any of the other reindeer? Rudolph saved Christmas once, and like, he didn't do it alone. Just because he could see through the snow, which, by the way, wouldn't have been useful in Arizona, didn't mean he carried Santa's sleigh all by himself. But no, just because you were bullied as a kid, you get your own song. Well, enough about you going down in history, Rudolph. I'm gonna make my own song about Prancer. Do, do, do. Prancer, the normal nose reindeer, had a very normal nose. And if you ever saw it, you would even say, yep, that's a nose. All of the other reindeer respected him for meeting the expectations of what a normal reindeer should be like. They always let little Prancer play on his reindeer bike. Okay, I'll stop. What if the reason Rudolph had a shiny nose was because Rudolph's mom had an affair with a clown? That was based off a comic I made in 2014. Why did the three wise men bring baby Jesus gold, Frankenstein, and myrrh? What kind of baby would want that? Okay, that was also based off a comic I made in 2014. Man, 2014 was just my year. Please read my comics. You know what? I'm not done talking about Rudolph. You guys have all seen the stop-motion movie they made about him in the 60s, right? You know, about the elf who wants to be a dentist. So who wouldn't?
Practice!
Well, there's one scene in the movie where Yukon Cornelius sacrifices himself to kill the abominable snowman, and he saves all of his friends, and also indirectly saves Christmas, but whatever, he doesn't get a song. But then later in the movie, he just walks through the front door, and everyone's wondering how he survived, and Rudolph even says,
But you went over the side of a cliff!
And then Yukon tells everyone the answer,
Didn't I ever tell you about bumbos?
Bumbos bounce!
And then everyone just laughs it off like it was a hilarious joke and doesn't ask him any more questions. Even as a kid, I thought that was a stupid explanation. What does that mean, bumbos bounce? Like, did you two fall off the cliff, and then when you hit the bottom, just trampoline yourself all the way back up? Oh wait, no, I think I know what it means. It means the writers didn't want to kill off a character, so they just came up with a plot device to make him live. You know, because you can't have death in a kid's movie! No one dies. Not even the bad guy dies. How does Santa deliver to houses without chimneys? I think Tim Allen tried to explain it once. Anyway, I think that's going to do it for this video. I kept it short so that way I have more time to spend Christmas with my family. And it also gives me more time to wrap presents. Because, you know, I'm just terrible at wrapping. May I have your attention, please? Your attention. Please. May I have some? Please. What if I put up gameplay of Subway Surfer and used a robot voice? Would that keep you stimulated?
Wikipedia says that people born between the year 1981 and 1996 are part of a group called Millennials. And I am a 96 baby. Hello, Year of the Rat. What's up? I'm cusping on that millennial Gen Z line, so I can relate to all you Gen Zers, okay? I know what cap means, I know what drip means, and I also don't remember where I was when 9/11 happened. However, Gen Z, there is a difference between us. We're both a generation that grew up on the internet, but you grew up with the internet. We grew up with the internet. The internet didn't used to always look like this. It has metamorphosized a multitude of times. Now, if you talk to an older millennial, they'll tell you the horror stories of the late 90s internet, how the internet used to be paired with your home's landline, and if you don't know what a landline is, good. If you wanted to surf the net at blazing speeds of 7 kilobytes a second, then you couldn't use your telephone at the same time. This was before texting even existed, so if you needed to talk to someone, you had to call them and look up their phone number in that 20-pound weapon known as a phone book, and then if someone else was using the internet, they'd get the pleasure of listening to... Although, if I had to make a sound that represented the entire internet, it would sound exactly like this. I didn't grow up with dial-up, but I did grow up in a time where the internet looked completely different. By the time I was exploring the interwebs, we got speeds up to 1 megabyte per second. So the highest quality video you could stream on YouTube was in 240p, or this big. And it would still buffer. A lot. Gen Z, you weren't there when YouTube had a 5-star scoring system and the subscribe button was yellow and people would put these things all over their videos. You weren't there when the videos were in a 4:3 aspect ratio because that's what TVs looked like. You weren't there when a background for a website would be a never-ending grid of a JPEG and music would play against your will and your cursor would turn into a sparkly wand and... Okay, that's actually pretty cool. Whatever happened to that? And then the person who built the website would go, it's looking pretty good, but you know what this web page really needs? A counter that'll tell you the total number of people who visited. Let me just copy this HTML code I found online. And if you're around my age and you also had unsupervised computer time, then great, you were also there to experience the pre-puberty years of the internet. Try to imagine the internet without social media. No Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, or MySpace. Were people back then just not talking about themselves or sharing their opinions online? Were we as a society more connected with the people we knew in the real world? No, of course not. People have been sharing their opinions online since day one. They were just doing it on random message boards. I know it sounds trivial nowadays, but there was once a novelty in being able to type anything you wanted into the computer and then someone else you didn't know would instantaneously respond. Even Neopets, a game targeted to children, had chat rooms and let anyone send unfiltered messages to children. I'm surprised I didn't meet any weirdos. That's one thing that'll never change with the internet. There will always be weirdos online. In fact, most of a weirdo's life is spent behind a computer. I would know. I think people loved sending messages so much that sometimes your friend would send you a message that said, "You've just been hit by the duck truck. Send this message to 8 of your friends and you'll be as sexy as a truck." Ignore and you'll be hit by a 16-wheeler. You have 7 days. And instead of blocking that person, some people would keep the chain going. Hey, I have a quick question. When was the last time you ever had to type a specific website into your address bar? Probably somewhere about 10 years, give or take. You just type in a Y, and then YouTube pops up. You put in a T, you get Twitter, and P gets you picturesofalligators.com. And if you had a specific question you wanted to ask the internet, you just Yahoo it, right? Yahoo? Oh, no, that's not the one you kids are using. You kids are using that new search engine, right? Ask Jeeves? I know there's like 4 main websites that everyone goes on, but back then, instead of having a social media account, people made their own websites. So there were a bunch of different websites for you to explore. And to help you find those websites, you had a few search engines to pick from. Everyone loves to dunk on Bing for even attempting to be a search engine, but back in the day, Google had some competition. Obviously, I can see why Google ultimately won the search engine battle. Google is a great company, and I would recommend Google to all my peers and coworkers. I love Google! As much as I love the internet, some of the best memories we had on the computer weren't even on the internet, were they? Sometimes the internet would just go down. But did that stop us? Did we go outside? No. We were still able to supply ourselves with hours of entertainment even without an internet. All you had to do was click Start, All Programs, Accessories, Games, and then... Space Cadet Pinball. I guarantee every millennial watching this right now just got hit with a big wave of nostalgia. This game might seem simple because there's only two buttons that you can press, but when you really got into it, this game had a whole lot more going on. Trust me, Space Cadet Pinball was all we had sometimes, and I cherished every second of it. But if you were anything like me growing up, you were also practicing your art skills. And luckily, every computer came pre-installed with a top-of-the-line painting software that every artist needs. Yeah, this program's got everything. There's a line tool, and a bucket tool, and a circle tool. And sometimes when I was really bored, I would make a black rectangle, scribble the freeform selection tool on it, and then blammo! Yeah, I still got it. I just made a masterpiece. And, Fun James bonus tip, for some extra self-induced epilepsy, hold down Control-I, which will invert the colors, so your masterpiece will go... Oh my god! Oh, it hurts to look at!
Hey, looks like you're trying to create a conclusion to this YouTube video. Would you like my help?
No, Clippy. Even when you were around, I never used you. I just liked having you there to keep me company. The internet is still a relatively new invention that is ever changing the way we live. And we have yet to see the full effects of what being connected since birth does to a person. The fact that the accumulation of all human knowledge can now fit in your pocket? That's going to affect your day-to-day life! Now, I'm not going to sit here and tell you to get off the internet, touch grass, and live your life to the fullest. Otherwise, I'd be a hypocrite. And unemployed. There's no denying all the positive things that the internet has to offer. But I'm also not going to deny all the negative things that come with instant gratification, too. As technology advances, so too do we advance the amount of time we spend online. The internet can connect us to a million different people and perspectives that we never would have been exposed to before. But it can also expose us to some really nasty people and perspectives. And the only thing we can do about those people is shrug and say, "Sorry, that's the internet." So, are we, as a society, better off with the internet? I think so. But just, I don't know, just remember to drink water and stretch. Alright, that's the lesson of this video. Go stretch. I'm serious, right now, go touch your toes.
Yeah, I'm not really sure you should do a video about Arizona. I mean, only people from Arizona will think it's funny. I'm gonna do it anyway. So if you saw my Bashes video, which I think was the fifth one in the French Trip series, you'll know that I live in Arizona. So cool, I'm gonna talk about it. Pros and cons of living in Arizona. Pro. We got cacti. And in fact, we, and a tiny bit of Mexico, are the only place in the world with saguaro cactuses. I mean cacti. Boom! And as an extra bonus, they look really funny with Christmas decorations on them. Con. Not a lot of trees. Which I mean... Who needs trees? They just stand there. All they do is provide shade and oxygen. I guess you could climb them. I don't need that. Instead of trees, we have these things. Pro. We have In-N-Out. Okay, that store technically originated in California, but it's moved to here. And it's delicious. I actually applied there. And I got an interview. They didn't hire me, though. You guys are missing Con, the heat. It's unbearable. In the summer, you can expect the weather to be in triple digits. We don't have to be told not to leave our dog or babies inside cars, because we're already dying of heat stroke while the air conditioning is on. Pro, we don't have daylight savings. Which might seem like a good thing, but the only reason we don't is because con, the sun is trying to kill you. Yes, it's hot here. Pro, it's... I think we got the Grand Canyon, which is like one of the seven wonders of the world, I guess. And it can be seen from the Great Wall of China. I'm just kidding, that's not true. Oh, I got it. Pro. Citrus. We grow oranges, lemons, and grapefruits. They only get ripe in the winter, though? These are actually part of the three C's of Arizona. We have citrus, copper, cats, cacti, and cattle. And calcium, because of all the sunshine we're getting. Con. It hardly rains here. Yes, that's a bad thing, because I never learned how to close an umbrella. Okay, that's an exaggeration. Of course I know how to close an umbrella, but it was a very hard learning curve. And Arizona was not built to get rained on. When we do get rain, streets flood, schools close, and trees, well, these kinds of trees, fall. Pro. So, yeah, the summer can be unbearable, but winter is a total breeze. Winter is when the weather is perfect. While everyone else has to deal with stuff like this, here all we get is ripe lemons perfect for making cold lemonade with. And because our winters are so not really wintry, we have a bunch of old people who move down here in the winter and then move back to their summer home in Minnesota or whatever. They're like birds who migrate south in the winter, but like snowbirds, which is coincidentally what we call them. So really it's sort of a pro slash con. On one side, we have tolerable weather, but on the other side, old people. You know, I can't really think of any more pros, so we're just gonna say more cons. Apparently, Phoenix was ranked number 10 on the rudest cities in America, which, okay, how do you measure a city's rudeness level? Was the person making this list, like, seeking out rude people and comparing them to other cities? Like, oh, this person in Phoenix called me a piece of shit, but this person in Wyoming only called me a piece of crap. So, I guess Phoenix just has more rude people. Add it to the list. And also on the same list, we apparently had some of the worst drivers around, which I can sort of see because everyone here drives 7 to 15 miles over the speed limit. But I really hate slow drivers, so it's kind of a pro for me, but I guess it's a con. Also, did you guys know that a haboob is another name for a dust storm? And I know this because we've had to use that word before. And because we call them that, dust storms become 20 times more awesome. In fact, we're probably excited to see haboobs just so we can make jokes about them. As soon as we see a cloud of dust on the horizon, we all go, ah, guys, it's a haboob! You guys remember us? This is what we call it. And then we go inside and make jokes like, oh man, this is one massive haboob. And lastly, probably the worst con of all, the heat. I know I already mentioned it 3 times, but I don't think I've really driven my point home here. It's so hot here. I am literally sweating right now as I'm recording this, and that's not on the script.
Please get me out.
And some of you watching are probably like, but James, it's a dry heat, right? That means it's not as bad. Let me answer that question with another question, and then an answer. Do you know what else a dry heat is? Ovens. And volcanoes. And that's where I live.
Hey, if you're watching this and it's late at night and you have school tomorrow, I'm sorry. Top 10 things that keep me awake at night. Number 10, eating all those sugary snacks before my bedtime. My blood sugar goes through the roof. Sorry, I just can't help myself. I love a good cookie dipped in hot chocolate. Number 9, death and existentialism. Just the thought that one day me and everyone I love will die, and in just 500 years, no one is going to remember me. So what's the point of doing anything? In the grand scheme of the universe, do I even matter? Unless the internet's still around by then. Thumbs up if you're watching this in the year 2516. And also, don't forget me. Number 8, my dogs! My dogs just love to sleep on my bed every night. And you see, I sleep on a twin-size bed, which is a stupid name for a bed that can fit one person. And I'm actually a twin, so I'm allowed to sleep on those. And I'm not on the below average side of the height spectrum, so I cover about 110% of the bed. And if me and my dogs are both cognitive enough to plan something out, maybe we could set up a system. I mean, they're pretty small dogs. I did the math. They should be able to fit. But my dogs have found that the most comfortable part of the bed is right dead center in the middle. So I just gotta finagle my way into a comfortable position, and if the dog leans up against you or sits on your leg, then you're obligated by dog law not to move because you might disturb the dog, and you love them too much to do that. And my bed is right next to a window, so I sometimes open the blinds so they can look outside, and so they're both right next to my face. But then in the morning, if there's another person or God forbid another dog outside, then jeez, that was a long one. I just like talking about dogs. Number 7. There are as many creatures on your body as there are people on Earth. And you don't want to even know how many are living on your bed right now. Now, is this true? I don't know. I just saw it on one of those fun fact websites. Not too fun of a fact, I think. But not knowing whether or not it's true is even scarier. That means there are probably microorganisms dying on you every second. At least 12 of them have died on you since you started watching this video. But chances are that some of them are probably doing it on your kneecaps, on your eyelashes. Microorganism, more like micro-orgasm. Now, there's two ways you can look at this. One being that there's so many tiny creatures living on me, and no matter how hard I scrub, I'll never be clean. Or, you're never alone. Every night when you hop into that empty bed of yours, you're sleeping with billions of microorganisms. You slut. Number 6. They never caught the Zodiac Killer. I know he was around in the 70s, but if he was in his 20s in the 70s, that means he's only in his late 60s, early 70s right now. He can still be out there. Who knows what he could be doing? Maybe even failing at running for president. Ugh. And also, according to some conspiracy theories, they never caught John Wilkes Booth. Maybe Booth wants to get revenge. Maybe he's had enough and now he wants to run for president. Number 5. Fractals. What are those, you ask? Imagine you're a farmer and you have infinity fence posts to build a closed pen for your animals. And you have to use all the fence posts. And you think, well, first off, that's physically impossible. If I have infinity fence posts, then I can't use all of them because I'll always have more. Hey, while you're complaining and theorizing over there, I just built your stupid pen and it looks like this. This is a fractal, children. It's a closed shape with an infinite perimeter. What? What? Infinite perimeter? But I can see it. I can measure it. Oh no, shut up. You're not looking close enough. Let's zoom in. Basically, you can zoom up on this pattern forever. That's just what a fractal is. So since no matter how much you zoom up on this shape, it will always repeat itself. The perimeter of this shape, or the fence you use to make it, is infinite. It's a closed shape with an infinite perimeter. Is the area of this shape infinite too? I don't know, ask Vsauce. Doesn't that blow your mind? Number 4. Barcode scanners scan the white spaces in the barcode, not the black spaces. Number 3. Looking on my phone for hours before I go to bed. How many times do you tell your friends over Skype, alright, I'm going to bed now, and then you go to your bed and you pull out your phone and mess around with it for an hour? And I've heard some studies saying, oh, looking at computer screens all day makes it harder for you to sleep, which is probably true. Why do I go on my phone every night? And the sad thing is I usually stop looking at my phone because my battery is going to die. I have a problem. Number 2. The universe is huge. Whoa, do you realize how big space is? Man, we are just a speck in the grand scheme of things. This is kind of getting back to my point that nothing really matters. Did you know that scientists have found a black hole that's 12 billion times larger than the sun? That black hole is about 1,800 light years long. You know, you probably could have lived your whole lives without knowing that. I'm sorry. Before we get to number 1, here are some honorable mentions. And the number one thing that keeps me awake at night is, YouTube is not a stable job. Because of how long it takes me to make a video, I can't really give my opinion on YouTube drama. Heck, I'm still working on my Fine Bros rant. So a lot of you probably know YouTube took away some creators' monetization on videos for not being advertiser-friendly, and they weren't even telling them about it. Now, I'm a pretty innocent PG-rated channel, so I didn't get affected by this new change at all. See you later, scrubs! But dang it, if this shows us anything, is that YouTube does not care too much at what's making their website profitable. What's stopping YouTube from saying, hey, we're gonna take 90% of your ad revenue and all your titles have to say YouTube is great in them? And yeah, if YouTube makes bad business decisions, then they'll be out of business. But so will I. So that keeps me awake at night. Merry Christmas.
Yeah, that's right, I said it.
What are you gonna do about it, atheists?
Christmas carols are an integral part of creating the Christmas atmosphere. Okay, yes, I agree. It's annoying when radio stations play Christmas music directly after Halloween, but when December finally rolls around and Michael Bublé emerges from his cave, magic fills the air. And if you work in retail, you've probably already listened to every single Christmas song ever created. After many hours of research, I have found that there's two types of Christmas music. On one side, you have songs about Santa Claus, and on the other side, you have songs about Jesus. Isn't it funny that Santa is an anagram for Satan? Just something to think about.
Christmas is easily the most sung about holiday. Halloween isn't even in a close second, but it's also the most diverse genre of music out there. You have songs like Away in a Manger and Silent Night that can put anyone to sleep, but under the same umbrella, you have Santa Baby and Christmas Don't Be Late by Alvin and the Chipmunks. I love Christmas carols, okay? It's one of the few good things left in this world that brings a smile to my face. But now I want to talk about the Christmas carols that don't make a lot of sense. Starting with the song Silent Night. Okay, sure, I've never given birth before, but I don't know if all is calm, all is bright is a good way to describe the process of childbirth. I get that it was Jesus and he's perfect, okay? But he's still a baby. Mary still had to go into labor. I don't know, I see all these nativity scenes with Jesus being the center of attention and Mary just off to the side with everyone else. But she just gave birth, you guys! Someone needs to build Mary her own manger to lay down in. Also, sleep in heavenly peace? Yeah, you're not gonna do that ever again. So the song Last Christmas is about when Taylor Swift gave someone her heart for Christmas, but then on December 26th they re-gifted it to someone else, so then the very next year she gave it to someone special. I don't know what the moral of that song is, but it could have been about any holiday. They just happened to break up the day after Christmas. Last Earth Day, I gave you my heart. See, that still works. Walking into Winter Wonderland, I have a question. Who is Parson Brown? Why is the first thing he says when he comes to life, "Hey, are you kids married?" No, man. But you can do the job when you're in town, if you know what I'm saying. Oh, Parson is a priest. He was asking, "Are you married? Because I'm a priest. I can marry you two. That's my job." Ah. Carol of the Bells? Now, I love this song, but honestly, I don't see how this counts as Christmas music. Have a Holly Jolly Christmas? What do you mean by kiss her once for me? Are you cheating on me? Baby, it's cold outside. Okay, now this one is extremely problematic. Why don't they just put a coat on? All I want for Christmas is my two front teeth, a hippopotamus, and you! I would not want to meet the person who made this Christmas list. Just saying. I'm getting nothing for Christmas. How did I not know about this song until just now? Alright, how many Christmas songs can say they got a movie based off of them? Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer? Yeah, it's a classic. Frosty the Snowman? Yeah, good choice. The Little Drummer Boy got a movie? Okay, fine, yeah, I'll count that. I think you're all missing the real classical Christmas song. Grandma got run over by reindeer. In the song, it's canon that Grandma died, but at least in the movie, Grandma lived. She just got kidnapped by Santa because he was trying to hide the evidence. You know, no witnesses. I hope they don't make a Baby It's Cold Outside movie. Just an hour and a half of people not putting on jackets. Anyways, I have to keep this video extremely short if I want to get it out by Christmas. I hope you all have a good holiday, and if you don't celebrate Christmas, you're missing out on some great carols and questionable morals. Thanks for watching. I'm going to be taking some time off to celebrate Christmas with my family. Remember to buy that merch, and as always, wear your seatbelt. Do you all remember that classic kids movie made in the 70s about a pig and a spider? Yeah, Charlotte's Web? Remember how it made us a lot of money? I mean, remember how it ended on a cliffhanger?
What was he talking about?
I didn't think it was a cliffhanger.
Yeah! Big cliffhanger! It's been 30 years! Everyone wants to know what happened to that spider!
The spider died, Ethan.
Oh, I didn't watch it. But you got one thing right. Everyone is wondering what happened next. The first movie wasn't satisfying enough. America needs a sequel.
Who would watch that?
And then 3 years later, we can make a live-action version! Now you're speaking my language, Ethan. Everyone else, you're fired. For some reason, movie producers and showrunners think that kids are stupid and don't know what good content is. They probably think that as long as a kid's show is a cartoon and it's moving, they'll love it. Well, here's the truth, Hollywood. The cartoons don't have to move, but you do need to write likable characters and a plot that actually makes sense. The only people who know what kids like these days are YouTubers. Am I right, fellow youths? Hashtag let Pokemon go to the polls. I thought I had pretty low standards as a kid, but sometimes I'd be watching a show and even I'd think, this is weird. Why does this need to exist? Why are the animals singing? One of my favorite shows growing up was Yu-Gi-Oh! Anyway, because I'm an adult, I bought and framed 3 Yu-Gi-Oh! Cards.
And dang it, these cards are too small to even fit in the frame.
I don't even know why I liked Yu-Gi-Oh! So much. It was basically just anime characters playing the exact same card game over and over. Yu-Gi-Oh! Would be losing, he would give a speech about friendship or the heart of the cards, and then he would draw the Yu-Gi-Oh! Must Win card. And most of the time, he wouldn't even play by the rules. And then rinse and repeat that formula for 200 more episodes and 4 spin-offs, and you got yourself a successful anime. I think Yu-Gi-Oh! Was the first sign that gaming channels were gonna be a thing. Kids just love watching other people play games. Because they suck at them. Okay, enough about Japanese cartoons. If Yu-Gi-Oh! Was able to keep my hyperactive attention span engaged, then what TV shows did I think were weird even as a kid? Keep in mind that these opinions are coming from someone who thought the Star Wars prequels were good. So, Misa take it with a grain of salt. Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. To be fair, I've never seen a single episode of TMNT. From what I hear, it's a good series, but just the concept by itself was enough for my kid brain to think, this show is silly and I'm not gonna watch it. Like, come on. Ninja Turtles? That's a little weird, seeing that turtles are slow and aren't very maneuverable.
Help, I'm a turtle and I can't get up!
They're mutants? Okay, I guess that makes sense. And they're teenagers? Teenagers are mean to me. This is where I draw the line. Those are three adjectives that don't belong in a sentence together. And they're named after famous Renaissance artists? Why don't you just give them normal turtle names, like Sheldon. Whatever. Let's go watch a real show about Japanese people playing card games. I used to think that the Powerpuff Girls was a girly TV show, and so I never watched it. But then the show got rebooted, and everyone on the internet was saying how much they used to love the original, and all I could think was, man, if only I wasn't a sexist baby. Do you guys remember Zaboomafoo? Zaboomafoo was the show on PBS Kids where a lemur and these two brothers named the Krat Brothers would teach kids all about wild animals. I always thought that the two brothers were named the Krap Brothers, and I only just learned their real names right now when I looked up how to spell Zaboomafoo. Also, they have a website and it looks like this. Anyway, one of the episodes was all about eggs. The Krat Brothers talked all about the different kinds of eggs animals lay, and then the lemur asks,
what's it like to be in an egg?
And then one of the Krat Brothers just appears in a giant egg and says, it's pretty squishy and gooey in here. And he brought a pizza with him.
Pizza!
I watched that episode as a kid and had two questions. One, how'd he get inside the egg? And two, what laid him? The more I thought about it, the weirder I felt. This is how fetishes start, PBS. Can you believe my brother is inside this egg? Now, when I think back to movies I thought were weird as a kid, the first thing that comes to mind were those freaking American Mouse Tail ones. They're about these mice trying to immigrate to America. Good luck doing a 2017 reboot. Also, I have to talk about all those bad Disney sequels. They're all bad. Don't tell me, oh, I thought The Little Mermaid 2 was alright. No, they're all bad. My least favorite one was The Hunchback of Notre Dame 2. I remember one time I watched both movies back to back, and just having seen the first movie, and then seeing the opening scene in the second one, I thought, what is this? This should be called The Hunchback of Notre Dame. I know those Disney sequels were just an easy way for Hollywood to make money, but think about how much more money they could have made if they just made good sequels. There was this one movie called Quest for Camelot. And as a kid, I liked this movie. It wasn't on my top 10, but it was alright. There was this one griffin who I thought looked cool and had a funny voice.
Precisely.
However, there's one part in the movie, and if you've already seen this movie, you probably know what I'm going to talk about, where a two-headed dragon sings a song about wanting to be separated from the other dragon. There's a lot of things wrong with this song. I don't want to go too in-depth, but at one part they dress up as Cher and Elvis for some reason, except kids who watch this are too young to know or care about these people, and any adults watching this with their kids are just thinking, this is uncomfortable. Keep in mind that it takes a team of people to animate something like this. This song had to go through multiple, well-paid professional songwriter people, and they all had to look at the scripts and go, yeah, this is definitely a good idea. The last movie that I suppressed was Charlotte's Web 2. Wilbur's Great Adventure. I don't think enough people are talking about this movie. I thought the first one was a classic story about a pig who cheats death because a nerd spider took pity on him. Also, I just want to talk about this one scene in the first movie where Wilbur found out the farmers were going to kill him, so he started crying, I don't want to die.
I don't want to die! I don't want to die!
I know this pig isn't even real, but that scene was the closest thing to turning me vegan. The sequel is exactly what you'd expect from a sequel made 30 years after the original to be. They did change the character design a lot. I guess all these celebrities are still doing plastic surgery. Look what they made Charlotte look like in the sequel. The reason I bring up this movie is because of a scene towards the end. So this one character just can't fit in with all the other farm animals. He's a black sheep. Literally, they made him a black sheep. He was doomed to be an outcast from the start. And then a fox has a musical number, attacks the farm, and then goes after the black sheep.
The other white meat.
But he doesn't kill and eat the black sheep right there, no. Instead, he kidnaps, or sheep-naps, the sheep and takes him to an abandoned house, as any fox would do. And then, I don't know if I'm interpreting this the wrong way, but watching this scene, I was picking up some creepy, non-advertiser-friendly vibes. The fox is basically telling the sheep, "Oh yeah, I'm gonna eat ya. I'm gonna eat ya. Oh yeah, I'm gonna put you in my mouth." Just eat him already! Stop licking your lips! Look what he does with his tail, and tell me you're not picking up some sexual tension! There's even a part where the sheep started to run away, but then the fox dragged him back down. Where do you think you're going, sheep boy? I'm going to be a furry. If you're weirded out by this, don't worry. I was too. And also, we're all done. Those were all the movies and shows that weren't too far suppressed down for me to tell you about. I asked a friend what movies weirded them out as a kid, and they said The Hunchback of Notre Dame. What are you talking about? That was a great movie. Get on my level, scrub. I used to watch foxes seduce their meals before they vored them.
I think that everyone at some point in their life should work in a fast food or retail job. Not to improve their work ethic or anything, but so that everyone knows what it's like to have that kind of job. They wouldn't work in fast food their whole lives, maybe just like for 6 months, just so they get a feel for it. So with that, let's talk about the time when I worked in fast food. I used to work at a very small local sandwich shop. I don't know if any of you guys heard of it. It's called Subway. Our spokesperson was in the news recently. I don't know if you guys look at the news. Did you hear he got beat up in jail? I kind of want to meet the person who beat up Jared more than Jared. Not in person. We wouldn't meet in person, obviously. But, like, he would be behind bars, and I would just look at the guy who beat up my spokesperson. How many people get to say that they beat up a fast food icon who is also a pedophile? Only one, and it's that guy. Okay, but seriously, guys, working at Subway was probably one of the most easiest jobs out there. I don't know why I'm about to complain about it to you guys. We got free cookies. And you know the comic with the Subways in Hell? I was actually working at Subway when I made that comic. I just think it adds sort of a little bit of value to it. You see, the owners, who are husband and wife, can you believe it, of the Subway I worked at owned two stores. One of the Subway stores was in a Walmart on an Indian reservation, because we have those in Arizona, and the other Subway was the Subway I worked at. And since the Walmart store was always busy, the owners would spend 99% of their time at that store. So I didn't really have a boss most of the time. On the off chance the owners did show up, they would just pick up some food and then they would make sure I was making sandwiches the right way. And every time I made a sandwich in front of them, they would always find something wrong with it, without fail. You put on too many olives. Do you know, according to the Subway formula, you're only supposed to put on 8 olives on a foot long? 8! One for every other bite. That's just ridiculous. Can you imagine someone just counting out 8 olives? Nobody does that. I usually worked the closing shift, and at the end of the night, we would turn the alarm and we'd have 60 seconds to get out of the store. But one time I had the opening shift, so I unlocked the door to get in with my key, and the alarm went beep, beep, meaning I had 60 seconds to turn it off. No big deal, right? I've turned the alarm on all the time when I was closing. So I go to the little control panel, and I type in the code, and nothing happens. The beeping is still there, and the clock is still ticking down. So I go, okay, I'm going to press each button very carefully. I'm going to make sure each button makes a beep when I press it. Beep, beep, beep. Nothing still happens. So I go, okay, I'm going to make sure to press each button very carefully. And I start thinking, did they change the passcode without telling me? Well, this is the only passcode I know, so we're just going to try it again. And I press each button very carefully. Beep. 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 And it goes quiet. And then the alarm goes off. I still had like 20 seconds left. But I guess when you get it wrong 3 times, it automatically assumes that you're a burglar. So while the alarm is going off, I look on the contact sheet for the owner's cell phone number. I step outside, I call him, and he doesn't pick up. So I go back inside, find the number for the other Subway store. They open an hour before we do. Someone picks up with their stupid voice. Oh, thank you for calling Subway. I'm blah, 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 blah. How may I help you? And I go, hey, is Mike there? That's not his real name, guys. Don't worry. And they go, just a minute. Yeah, sure. I have all the time in the world. The cops might be on their way, but take your time. So, Mike picks up. Yellow. Hey, Mike, this is James. What's the passcode for the alarm? Who is this? It's James. What's the passcode? What are you doing there, James? Why aren't you answering the question? I have the opening shift. Is the alarm going off? Yeah, no one told me the new code.
Yeah, we changed it. It's the last four digits of your social security number.
Oh, okay, thanks, Mike.
I don't know my social security number.
So I finally get the alarm off. No one showed up, thankfully. Which I actually don't know if that's a good thing or not, now that I say it out loud.
We did have a store manager who would, like, make the schedule and sometimes tell us, hey, can you guys do a better job at your job?
But other than that, she was cool. She watches my videos, and so do her little brothers. They're big fans. Shout out to Ivan and Andy. Those are the brothers.
So get this. At Subway, you only work with one other person. Just you and them in an empty Subway for 5 hours.
I mean, we weren't, like, empty all the time. Okay.
And when you're not making sandwiches, you have other stuff to do, like stocking the chips, or we had stuff to do. But okay, we did watch a lot of Netflix and do homework, so I mean, it was
that other person you worked with would make or break your entire shift. It wasn't the annoying customers. I kind of got used to annoying customers. So I worked with a lot of crappy people. And I also worked with a lot of people who I would probably never become friends with except in a work setting. You see, you gotta understand the type of people who got jobs at Subway. Potheads. Most of them are potheads. And some of them are really cool. I'm just going to go over a couple of the characters that I worked with. There was Tyler. I freaking love this guy. He smoked a lot of weed. He actually taught me what vaping was, and he got me into Clash of Clans. I actually mentioned him and his girlfriend in my riddles video. I don't know if I ever told him that. And of course, I have to mention Corey. He was cool. We watched How to Get Away with Murder on Netflix, and I've also hung out with him outside of work. What him and Tyler had in common is that they would actually do their job, which you gotta appreciate. Then there was this guy. Get this, who was also named Jared. He loved marble, and that's like the only thing he would talk about. I can say these things. He doesn't watch my videos. There was Sarah. She was cool. She made me a bread bowl. And her boyfriend, Jay. He talked about chakras and third eyes. He was interesting. And also, there's Anthony. He's cool. What's up, Anthony? For the 100,000 sprinkles video, I actually went back to Subway to use their scale because I knew they had one. And we counted 500 sprinkles again just to be more accurate for the 100,000. And Anthony helped me count. Instead of working. I mean, at least he got paid minimum wage for it. So two more stories before I go. One time, Jared asked me to take out this pile of trash, and I was like, oh, okay, I'll just put this pile of trash in the dumpster. And as I was taking it out, I saw that there was a chip poster in the pile, and I thought, this is too cool to throw away. I'm gonna keep it. So I took it home with me, and then the next day when I went in, people were saying, oh, where's the chip poster? We can't find the chip poster. We haven't seen it anywhere. And I'm thinking, I have the poster. I decided not to tell anyone that I had the poster, and it's still hanging up in my room. Sorry, boss, if you're finding out about this now. Okay, and then the other story. I was working with a manager, and we were just making sandwiches like usual, and I noticed that when we toasted a sandwich, it would burn the paper a little on the edges. That probably shouldn't be happening. So then a customer asks for just bacon toasted, and the boss lady puts some bacon on paper and then puts it in the toaster. And we don't have a setting for just bacon. So then when she opens the toaster, there was a fire on the bacon. So then she starts to whack it with the little metal tray thing, but all she ended up doing was fanning the flames, making the fire bigger. You got this, right? Then I went in the back and I got the fire extinguisher and I actually used it. I single-handedly saved that Subway.
Wait, what have I done?
Is it okay if the bacon's a little crispy and has nitrogen and carbon dioxide stuff on it?
Here's a little social interaction life hack I've discovered. If you're meeting someone new and you want to get to know them better, and you see any semblance of a tattoo peeking out of their sleeve, compliment it. If that person doesn't want to talk about their tattoos, they'll say, "Oh, thank you." Anyway, this is my stop. But if they do want to talk about their tattoos, their face will light up and then they'll do the rest of the talking. I realize that by giving you this advice, now anytime I compliment someone else's tattoos, it will seem disingenuous, but it's not, most of the time. I love all of your tattoos. That's right, I'm talking to you. I love your tattoos, dude. Whether it's how you got the tattoo, the meaning behind the tattoo, or being a tattoo of something you like, every tattoo is a story, and most people love telling stories about themselves. I wouldn't know anything about that, personally. I never understood why some people liked talking about their tattoos until I got one of my own. What, you think I'm gonna make a whole video about tattoos when I didn't even have any? That's right, I'm a marked man, Mom. What are you gonna do about it? Stop unconditionally loving me? Yeah, right. Wait, what are you doing with that cheese grater? Okay, but in all seriousness, can you make sure Grandma doesn't see this video, Mom? I don't want to upset her on the way out. Back in the day, tattoos used to be a symbol of rebellion and meant you couldn't get a job. No regrets, baby! But I feel like tattoos are getting more and more accepted, if not expected. I'll see a jacked, bald guy covered in tattoos and think, okay, yeah, he was meant to look like that. For me, the idea of being a badass tattooed guy with a sketch pad and a beanie and ripped jeans and a beaded bracelet always seemed cool to me. But like most people, when it came to tattoos, I had reservations. Ooh, this is gonna be on my body forever? What if I hate it? I had an idea once of getting these 5 Magic the Gathering symbols tattooed on my forearm. I even dotted them out in Sharpie once just to give them a test drive. But I ultimately decided not to get them because I was worried in 5 years I would go, oh, these? I was really into Magic the Gathering in my 20s. Not anymore, though, so now every morning I wake up with impending feelings of shame and remorse that I even decided to get this thing. And I didn't want that to happen, even though I've been playing Magic for over 15 years, and it means a lot to me, and I'm going to be buried with my Sliver deck, and... alright, maybe I should just get it. Even though people know that tattoos are permanent, there are still way more bad tattoos than there should be. One time, I saw this picture of someone's tattoo on a bad tattoo subreddit, and I thought it'd be funny to prank my family group chat by photoshopping that tattoo onto my arm. And then I thought it'd be funny to post that picture onto Instagram. I didn't think anyone would fall for this poor excuse of a Photoshop job, but then the internet and my family proved me wrong. Immediately, I started getting phone calls from my parents, and even my book agent rang me up and was like, "Did you actually get that tattoo?" "No, it's not a real tattoo." I mean, it is a real tattoo, but it's on someone else's body. That's their cross to bear. I can only imagine what that person's family and book agent went through. My parents were not supportive of me getting tattoos. But whose are, am I right? Some people, like my parents, say that your body is like a temple, and getting tattoos is like putting graffiti on it. Which, sure. Okay, that's why I paid a professional graffiti artist to paint my temple exactly how I wanted. Also, you can't tell me not to deform my body when that's exactly what you did before I was even 24 hours old. Also, Jesus had piercings, and he loves showing them off to his buddies, so I think he'd be chill with a little tattoo. After much thought and deliberation, I finally settled on what my first tattoo would be. This was going to be permanently inked onto my body for the rest of my life. I got a tattoo in Courier New. Luckily, the artist was able to finish this in one session. It took quite a while, almost 5 whole minutes. Now let me explain why I got it. It was so that if anyone ever asked me, "Do you have any tattoos?" I could go, "Why, yes, I do." And then roll up my sleeve, and then I'd go, "Ha, ha, ha." When I showed off my tattoo on Jaden's Streamathon, there was one comment that said, "James having tattoo actually tattooed onto him is exactly the kind of tattoo I expected James to have." And that made me feel really good, because that meant the tattoo fit my vibe. And the second reason I got the tattoo was because I wanted to rebel. Since tattoos were frowned upon growing up, I wanted to have one just to have one. So I got a tattoo with no meaning whatsoever. Which, in a way, is the meaning. Even though the tattoo was small and usually covered up by my sleeve, I still felt anxious about getting it. And I continued to feel that way for about a week after I got it. It was a jump scare every time I saw it in the mirror, and I would look at it closely and go, "Yep, that's really in there. I sure hope I don't regret this." But then, after some time, the tattoo just became a part of me. Like, I didn't look in the mirror and go, "Yep, there's James and tattoo." I would go, "Yep, there's James. Full stop." And from that day on, I loved giving people advice on tattoos. As a marked man myself, I think you should absolutely get that Shadow the Hedgehog full back piece. YOLO, remember? What? You're worried that it's going to look bad when you're 70? Yeah, it's going to look bad when you're 70. You're 70. Don't think about how bad it's going to look. Think about how much you're going to enjoy it from now to when you're 69. I've known people my age who still hide their tattoos from their parents, but like the honest prodigal son that I am, I wasn't going to be doing that. But the next time I visited my parents, I walked into their house, and the very first thing my mom said to me was, "Do you have any tattoos?" She beat me to the punch. What? Why would you ask that?
because last night I had a dream that you came home and were covered in tattoos. So, which one of you incepted my mom? God? I said, are all tattoos bad? Yes, all of them are bad. Even this one. And I rolled up my sleeve and revealed my massive tat. And her reaction was, ah. Well, it's not the worst word to have permanently inked on your body. Later on, she said, if you go to a Star Wars party, you could change it to Tatooine. So, I think she took it pretty goodly. Now, some of you might be thinking that my epic sleeve of a tattoo isn't that big a deal. It's tiny and can only be seen if I'm swimming or boxing or wearing a tank top. But you see, after getting tattooed, I experienced what people in the tattooing business call catching the bug. After seeing how much I liked my first tattoo and knowing that I could handle having a tattoo, I was ready to get something badass. I set up a big boy tattoo appointment with an artist I liked, and when I was in the tattoo shop, the artist asked, is this your first tattoo? Is this my first tattoo? No, sweetheart. I think I know a thing or two about tattoos. So, without further ado, I would like to debut this out of the blue tattoo. You know, from The Dark Crystal, the Jim Henson 80s puppet movie that I did a video on it years ago. Now I have the best character permanently inked onto my skin forever and ever. That movie will always hold a special place in my heart, and now it'll hold a special place under my skin. And now, whenever I show someone the Chamberlain, we end up talking about the Dark Crystal, which is great, because that's what I wanted to talk about anyways. I think I just discovered an autistic conversational cheat code. When I was getting it done, the artist asked me if there were any other tattoos that I wanted to get, and I said, why, yes I do. I wanted to get the computer from Don't Hug Me, I'm Scared, because I also love that series, and because I'm a computery guy. And I didn't realize until as I was explaining it to the artist that both of these characters are puppets. So, I don't know what that says about my psyche. I never thought that I liked puppets that much, but if anyone wants to psychoanalyze me in the comments, that'd be great. And speaking of YouTube comments, I know a lot of people are going to bring this up, so I'm just going to address it right now. You probably noticed that Chamberlain isn't holding his iconic triangle scepter. Yeah, I already know that. That's because he's holding the Emperor's scepter. It's like my own little headcanon. He got to be the Emperor because he's cool and awesome. And come on, Dark Crystal fans. You think I don't know my lore? I didn't get the wrong scepter or anything. You think I'd get something wrong about the Dark Crystal? Okay, you want to know what happened? I own a Chamberlain statue because, of course, I do. And I took pictures of it to send as a reference image to the artist. And I totally forgot that I accidentally broke off his triangle scepter. And now, because of that, he's holding an entirely different scepter on the tattoo. But you know what? I don't care. This one's better. It's a more clear silhouette. Now, this time when I went to show my parents the tattoo, I don't know exactly what I was hoping for, but I wanted to see some dramatic pearl clutching. You know, just some real disappointment. Chamberlain had to be split up into two sessions, and I only got one done when I went to Arizona for a wedding. I saw my mom, and she didn't immediately ask me if I had any more tattoos. God didn't tattle on me this time. I told her, Mom, I gotta tell you something, privately. What is it? I need you to keep a secret from Grandma. Okay. I'm serious. Grandma can't find out about this. Okay. Look, it's Chamberlain. And I showed her the unfinished tattoo, and she went, oh, do you even like the Dark Crystal that much? I mean, yeah, the plot's kind of mid, but it's a cool world. Why were you more upset about my fake Baby Yoda tattoo than my real Dark Crystal tattoo? She didn't care, and neither did my dad. And you know what? I actually showed my grandma too, and she liked it. I can't make these people mad, no matter what I do. One of my cousins is a tattoo artist, and I was talking to him about tattoos, and my mom said, oh, you should get your cousin to finish it. And even he said, do not do that. Speaking of tattoo advice, if you're thinking about getting a tattoo, I think you should wait.
Obviously, it's your body, your choice, but with the minimum age of tattoos being 18, and in some states 16 with parents' permission, I just can't imagine being happy with any tattoos 16-year-old James could think of. All I'm saying is that I'm glad I waited and gave myself time to really know if this is what I wanted. And it was. I know you're young and you want to look as hardcore as possible, but you can still get a tattoo when you're like 23 and it'll look good. Trust me. No matter what tattoo you get, it's a way to express outwardly to the world what you like, what you want to remember, and who you are. Now, if you'll excuse me, I'm about to get a full back piece of my grandma's face. There's literally no way my family wouldn't love that. Thank you all for watching this YouTube video, and now that you're all done, I'm excited to announce that I have a Funko Pop of me! If that's something you're interested in, then you can head on over to my website and you can get a signed Funko while supplies last. As always, thank you to my amazing team, and the next time I'll see you, I might have more tattoos, who knows.
Juan Ponce de Leon was famously known for searching for the legendary Fountain of Youth with his crew in the 1500s. Spoiler alert, he didn't find it, obviously, because he's dead, I think. But his search might have been successful if only he lived in the 21st century. Ladies and gentlemen, I'm here to tell you that we have the key to immortality right in our grocery stores. And it all starts with this tiny red bottle of 5-hour energy. So drinking one of these gives you 5 hours of energy. So that means drinking two will give you 10 hours, right? It takes 17,520,000 hours to make up 2,000 years. And here's how we unlock our immortality. To get 17 million hours of energy, we would have to drink 3,504,000 bottles of 5-hour energy. After you do all that, you have enough energy to last the next 2,000 years. And there you go, that's how you live forever. Every 2,000 years, you just drink 3 million bottles of 5-hour energy. And what, that's 12 ounces a bottle divided by 128. So that's only 328,500 gallons of 5-hour energy, and boom. So it's not really a fountain of youth, it's more of a pond of youth. And you have to drink all that 5-hour energy every 2,000 years. It's not going to be forever. And it might take a while, so just set aside like an afternoon and just get sipping. Wait, hold on. If each bottle is $2.50, then how much would it cost? 8.7 million? Dang it! Only the rich get to live forever! Okay, guys, never mind. I guess immortality is impossible. Ugh, just looks like all of us are going to have to die.
I'll take school facts for 800, Alex. This is the most useless class that a person could take in school. Oh, man. What is... poetry? I'm sorry, Jeff, but the correct answer is all of them. They're all useless. In my first video, I didn't have enough time to say this, but I hate it when people are cool with their teachers. I understand that some teachers are more laid back than others, and sometimes they'll ask a class, "So, how was everyone's weekend?" Then if you want to talk about something or have important news, then you can share it. My dog died! Haha, yeah, they do that. But there's a line and you shouldn't cross it. Don't talk to your teacher just to talk to them during class. I don't know how much of a problem this is in other places of the world, but sometimes there would be kids in my class that would say, "Hey Susan, how was your daughter's dance recital? Did you remember all of her moves? I saw the video you posted on Facebook. It looked like she was having a fun time." Stop it! Stop it! Stop it! Maybe I wouldn't have been a good teacher. Before I tell you about my poetry teacher, I need to tell you about the preparatory school I went to so you can better understand where I'm coming from. So I went to a preparatory school in 9th grade, and first off, what is a preparatory school? Google says it's a private school that prepares students for college. Now hearing that definition, you might think, wait, don't all schools prepare students for college? Isn't that a school's job? And you might think that a preparatory school is more fancy and made out of marble and all the kids come from rich families. No. What it means is that the schools get little government funding and parents have to pay for desks and the teacher's salary. I know different private schools will vary depending on how rich the parents are. I'm sure that school made out of marble exists somewhere, but the preparatory school I went to was relatively worse than a normal public school. The school I went to didn't even have desks. They had fold-up tables and the chairs were fold-up too. How did they- Oh. Well, now I know where all the budget went. The main difference between a public school and a prep school is that a prep school is smaller and there's a uniform and there's lockers. So why did my twin sister and I attend a preparatory school?
Because twins have superpowers and we need to go to a special school to enhance our abilities.
Nah, I'm just kidding. I'm kidding. That'd be cool though.
We went because when we were starting our freshman year, our older brother was a senior and he was already attending this preparatory school, and my mom didn't want to have to drive to two high schools to pick us up. We already had a carpool in place. You can't just mess with the carpool. And me and my sister didn't know what to expect from a public high school. We've never been. We thought we'd get bullied or something. Boy, I feel like picking on someone today.
Yeah, sure, we can go to a prep school. I mean, what's the worst that can happen?
Well, the carpool we had made it so we would arrive at the school super early before everyone else, and we'd be picked up from the school super late. And also, because it was a prep school, they gave out a stupid amount of homework. I remember breaking up the homework into pieces, like, okay, I can do the geometry while I'm waiting for school to start, the biology homework I can do during geometry class, and I have choir after lunch, so I can just do this during lunch. Look at me being responsible. I have a little sister who just finished her freshman year in a public high school, and she thinks it was so hard. Oh, you thought your ninth grade was hard? Try doing twice the amount of homework and wear the same pants every day.
So now the only question remaining is, why did my older brother go to a prep school in the first place?
Bro, why did you go to a prep school in the first place?
IDK, just decided to. Just felt like I should.
My mom reads my scripts, and she told me that he went to a prep school because one of his friends said that there were cute girls at the school, so he decided to stay there for 4 years. Okay, now let's talk about my poetry teacher. I'll call him Mr. Poe, because that's short for poetry. Poetry wasn't even an elective class. Every freshman was required to take it. And surprisingly, poetry was only the second most useless class you took at the school. The sophomores took a class on Latin. You know, that dead language that no one speaks. So Mr. Poe, I don't want to judge him too hard. I don't know how he was like outside of school, but just picking up the vibes I got from him as a 14-year-old, I think he was depressed. I mean, to be fair, anyone who likes poetry probably has something wrong in their head. But Mr. Poe just seemed sad all the time. Every single day he would start the class by saying, "It's the best day ever." Which, if you think about it, saying that every day only means that the days are going to get better and better, which is sort of poetic. But I think Mr. Poe was lying to himself. Also, Mr. Poe really liked anacondas. I mean, snakes. He really liked snakes. Sometimes he would go off on tangents talking about snakes. Royal pythons, also called American ball python, got their name because they turn into a ball when they get nervous. Also, did you know that snakes have two... Never mind. Sometimes in class, we'd be analyzing poetry, and Mr. Poe told us that every single word in a poem was important. The poet didn't have to use the word the, but they did. What did they mean? Sometimes we would spend days analyzing a single poem, taking notes and talking about what we thought the poet meant. One time a poem we were reading had someone talking, so there were quotation marks at the start of the sentence, but there weren't quotation marks at the end. The poet forgot to put end quotes. I remember noticing it and thinking, aha! A clue! Mr. Poe, I just made a breaking discovery. There's no end quotes here, meaning that the whole rest of this poem is told by this character. And Mr. Poe said,
oh no, that's just a typo.
Well, frickin', why am I perfectly nitpicking this piece when the poet purposely put poor punctuation in his poems? Pterodactyl!
This is gonna sound off topic, but do you guys know what lateral thinking puzzles are? Lateral thinking puzzles are sort of like riddles, but more stupid.
You're given a strange situation with little information, and you have to ask the person who told you the puzzle yes or no questions to get the answer. My favorite lateral thinking puzzle is this, because it's so stupid. A man goes into a restaurant, orders albatross, eats one bite, and then jumps off a bridge. Why? Now, normally, if we were playing legitly, you would ask me yes or no questions like, was the man in a relationship? And I would answer them saying, well, not anymore. The explanation is this. I'm not going to read it out because it's super long and complicated, but you can read it if you want. Well, Mr. Poe also liked to tell these lateral thinking puzzles, but his solutions were more dumber. One of the puzzles he told the class was, you're trapped in a restaurant, how do you get out? Now, I can think of like 5 solutions right off the top of my head. Okay, through the door, through a window, use a crowbar if it's locked. There's probably a sharp knife to cut through a wall, or you can dig a hole under everything with a spoon. But it was actually none of those answers. So, how do you get out of a restaurant you're trapped in? You get an education. Okay, let me explain. You're trapped in a restaurant because you're a waiter. That's your job. And to get out of the restaurant, you need to get a good education so you can get a better job. Kind of like how I was able to quit my job in the food industry by getting an education.
It's funny because he dropped out of college.
So the class got the answer to that riddle, but Mr. Poe told us another riddle and we never figured that one out. And that riddle is, anyone can dig a ditch, but it takes a real man to blank. Given that the answer to the first riddle was education, the answer to this could be anything. I really wanted to know the answer to this riddle, so I googled it, hoping that Mr. Poe just stole it from the internet, and I found this song. Anyone can dig a hole close enough to a ditch, but it takes a real man to call it home. Which sounds poetic enough. Let's see if the song gives us any more clues. Mr. Poe, I didn't know you were into this sort of stuff. So I wish I could give you the answer, but I don't have one. Feel free to guess what you think the answer is and give your reasoning in the comments. That'll be fun to read. But I will say the answer that I did come up with that I think makes the most sense. Anyone can dig a ditch, but it takes a real man to hide the body.
Boys and girls, come hear my greeting. I hope you don't plan on sleeping. Tonight, for while you are dreaming, evil awakes, unearthed and creeping. There's things that thump, things that bite, things that go bump in the night. What are these things you sit and ponder? Brace yourselves. We call them monsters.
What? He's going to tell us about monsters, but they're not going to be that scary.
Silence, you dirty apparition! Don't you see the danger you are in? For what I speak is 100% real. Don't believe me? Just ask my pet eel.
This guy is nuts.
What? I'm not an apparition. I'm a ghoul.
The first monster we'll see today is something that,
likes to eat hay. First they champ, then they stamp, then... Okay, I can't speak in rhymes for the whole thing. I have a question for you guys. Are you familiar with the term furry?
What?
Well, after doing research on these monsters, I don't think furry is a new concept. Humans, for whatever reason, have always been obsessed with personifying animals. And who can blame them? Look how cute these guys are. Now, a lot of these monsters follow a similar pattern. So if you ever wanted to Frankenstein up a monster, all you have to do is take two already existing animals, one of them being preferably a human, and then you just gotta put them together. You all know about mermaids. One part sexy, the other half is just some lady. Well, do you know about this even scarier combination? It's called a hippo. Campus. Half hippo, half college. They say after 4 stressful years, he accumulates $100,000 of debt and no one in his field is hiring. Oh, I'm just messing with you guys. Okay, but for real, a hippocampus is a half fish, half horse.
Oh, like the Neopet.
What?
Yeah, Fiopian. I had one when I was like 2. I used my Christmas paintbrush on it.
You guys aren't scared of a literal seahorse?
Well, how does it kill people? Like, can it turn them into stone?
No, but the Scandinavians have a version called the Kelpie that tricks humans into riding them, and then it drowns the humans.
Probably should have started with that one.
That's... okay, I guess.
All right, Edward, if a murderous horse doesn't put you on edge, then how about this? A monopod. Yeah, that's right, it looks just like a regular person, but it only has one leg.
Whoa, are you calling amputees monsters?
No, this amputee has one giant leg. And by the way, these guys date back all the way to 400 BC, way before the first amputee ever existed. Also, despite them only having one leg, they're supposedly very fast, so imagine this guy aggressively chasing you at midnight. Yeah, I'm sure you'd piss your pants too. What about this? A blemmy. Again, looks like a regular person, but oh wait, where's its head? I don't see it anywhere. Oh, it's on its chest, like some kind of... Pokemon! Come on, does this not terrify you? How would you give this guy a hug without suffocating him?
My dad doesn't have a head. Also, he rides a horse, so this is all a pretty normal Tuesday for me.
Alright, it's fine that you're not scared, because I've been saving the best monsters for last. Everyone, meet the Serpopherd. It has the body of a lion, the head of a lion, but the neck of a snake.
Ugh, it's so gross. Why would anything need that long of a neck? So it can talk to giraffes?
Imagine if it could retract its neck, and then you just think it's a normal old lion and say, hey, that's pretty scary, but at least it's 20 feet away from me, and then its head would just extend out of its body and then bite your head off.
Speaking of snake-based creatures, what is the second most mischievous animal? Answer, the snake.
Snakes represent Slytherin from Harry Potter, and those guys are always up to something, and snakes were responsible for the fall of man.
But do you know what the number one most mischievous animal is? Answer, the fox.
He's been in a ton of fables. He's a master hustler. So the fox and the snake are two of the most mischievous animals. But what if they had a baby together? Well, take a look at this monster from Chile called the... I can't say it. The Jirivulu, there we go. It's a half fox, half snake, and it has a claw for a tail, and it also creates whirlpools to drown people. Now this would be a really cool monster if it wasn't so terrifying. You know what? I got even more snake-based monsters to show you. Take a look at the Amphisbaena.
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 That's what I write. It's a half snake, half snake, but the same half. It's a snake with two heads on both ends for double biting action. I think it would be cool if there was a creature that was the snake's tail on both sides. That'd be so useless. Oh wait, that's just an oversized worm. How would either one of them poop? Great question. I honestly don't know how a real snake poops. And the last snake-based monster I'm going to show you is called the Chelalita longicollis. That's its Latin name. Its real name is the snake neck turtle. It's a lot like the serpapard with its long neck, but instead a turtle. But I doubt you'll have to worry about these things. There's no way these abominations can be real. No, those are real. Huh? They're indigenous to Australia. I saw one at the zoo with my dad. There's no way these things can be real. No, they're definitely real. But do you know what isn't real? All of us. None of us are real, James. Why do you think we all have the same voice? You're talking to yourself again. It's been 3 weeks since the accident. You need to snap out of it. What are you guys talking about? You're totally real. So, did I scare you? Huh? You guys scared? Hey, you! Knock it off in there.
Hey there, Frederick. What you doing? Oh, hello, brother of mine. Why, I'm just studying for a math test tomorrow. That's pretty neat, Frederick. Braxton, brother, shouldn't you also be studying for the test? Well, you see, Frederick, due to my high levels of apathy and the stress of knowing that I'll never be good at math, I've decided to completely give up on even trying to do good on the test.
So, what are you gonna do instead?
Oh, I'm just gonna go watch some YouTube videos.
School sucks! Especially math! Ugh! When will I ever use geometry / trigonometry / calculus in the real world? I think you're only saying that because you're bad at geometry / trigonometry / calculus. Why is everyone so quick to hate on math? Math is easy. How many essays did you have to write for math class? Oh, that's right. E to the I pi plus 1. Which is 0. One thing I would change about math class is I think it's dumb that you have to show your work. Ugh! Do you know how much harder it is to cheat when you have to show your work? Dear math, solve your own problems, tweeted MatPat. I hate Matt, replied Protato Gamer. Hey, that's not very nice of you, Prote. All he did was tweet about math. Maybe what you really hate is spelling.
Or maybe you really do hate MatPat.
Well, two can play at this game. When will I ever need to know about the themes and symbolisms in To Kill a Mockingbird when I go into the real world? That's right, never! You don't need to know anything to be in the real world. Okay, I think we can all agree that a lot of what school teaches you isn't that important. And there's definitely more important things schools could be teaching you, like taxes or how to pick a good president. But I'm not the one who makes the curriculum, so why am I even talking about it? Regardless of how broken your education system is, you should always stay in school, kids. Right, Dave? I was a good student in school, not counting college. And look how I turned out. I'm not using everything I learned in school almost every day. Sure, you'll probably never need to know that much about Shakespeare's plays. But hey, now you know how to read old-timey complicated books. And no, you'll probably never have to find the area under a curve ever. But now you can say that you can. And isn't that what life's all about? So enough with this introduction. I'm going to be telling you all some of my school stories. What do you mean Jaden already made a video on school stories? Did she call them school stories? I already stole from her like 2 videos ago. Okay, just, I'll think of something. So enough with this introduction. I'm going to be telling you all some of my academy anecdotes. So you know how guys can pee standing up? It's amazing. Ladies, if you've never peed standing up, then you're missing out. But there are some rules that apply with having the superpower. Like, don't go to a urinal right next to another guy unless it's absolutely necessary. Or, if the urinals don't have a divider, then everyone can all agree to keep your eyes and mind straight. These rules have been taught to us at a very young age. By the time we were in elementary school, we were all pros at peeing.
Except for some of us when we were asleep. But that's not important. So at this point in life, we all should have known what we were doing. But there was this one kid who I guess no one ever taught him how to pee correctly. This kid, I'm not going to say his race because it doesn't matter, but when he went to the bathroom, he would pull his pants and underwear all the way down to the ground. Some of the ladies watching this might be thinking, wait, is that not how guys pee? Ladies, you'll just have to trust me on this, but that is the most wrong way a person can pee. The first time I saw the kid doing this was when I was in the urinal right next to him. Pee faster! As us two bros were peeing, a third bro walked into the bathroom, saw this kid's bottom, and just went, ooh, and walked out of the bathroom. I wish I could have done the same. How do you tell someone, hey man, when you pee like that, everyone can see your butt. So just, here, let me show you how to do it. I don't know what happened to that kid, but I think he would agree with me that math is easy. He was Asian. When I was little, I had a very weird sense of humor. So in the fifth grade, there was this girl I'd known for a long time. We weren't strangers or anything. And one day I said to her, you have two big blue zits right there. And I pointed at her eyes. I was talking about her eyes. I called her eyes zits. Get it? She immediately slapped me. Probably because the joke was so awful. And that was the first time I ever got slapped by someone who wasn't a family member. And yes, it was Priscilla, the girl I sat next to in the cardboard boat video. She claims that the slap was an accident and that she was just trying to fake slap me to scare me. But I think she was really just self-conscious about her eyesits. One time, my sixth grade teacher, who was the same height as all of us, threw a stapler across the room because we wouldn't stop talking. Here's an anecdote about the first time I got detention, and it isn't that exciting. I was in the seventh grade and our class was at a computer lab. And the kid sitting next to me, his race doesn't matter, so I'm not going to say it. Asian, kept changing the computer wallpapers to cats and he kept showing me. To be fair, I thought what he was doing was hilarious. Then I asked him, can you change the background to Chuck Norris? That just goes to show you how long ago this story took place. He showed me what he did, I laughed, but then the teacher said, who's changing the wallpapers? She was able to see everyone's screens from her computer, and the kid said, me and James were. Dude, don't bring me into this! You were the one changing the wallpapers. I mean, I was involved a little, but don't drag me down with you. We ended up getting detention, except my school didn't call it detention. They called it CARE, which I'm sure was an acronym for something. If it wasn't an acronym, that would have been a weird thing to call detention. Let's just say it stood for kids are really extra. The whole time I was in CARE, I kept thinking in my head, don't cry, don't cry, don't cry. If they see you cry, you might as well move to China. And that was the only time I got detention. Except it wasn't called detention, so I still have a clean record. Alright, here's the last anecdote. This one happened when I was in the 11th grade. I was in an AP US history class, and I had it for a 0 hour. So that meant I was at the class before school even started, and I was way too tired to learn about presidents. I was sitting in class when all of a sudden I sneezed very loudly. And it was an above average sneeze, like one of those sneezes where you had to lean into it. And after I sneezed, this kid near me said, hey yo, Mr. Teacher, can we get some tissues? This boy's got a bloody nose. And I thought, oh shoot, I do? Well, that sneeze was pretty violent, and I did pick my nose a few minutes ago. And then the teacher looked right at me and said, oh yeah, you can just go to the bathroom. So I got up, and as I was walking to the door, I felt my face and realized, wait a minute, I don't have a bloody nose. I turned around, and there was a kid who actually did have a bloody nose walking towards me. I'm not going to say the race of the kid because it doesn't matter. Canadian, but I was in a pretty awkward situation. So I punched myself until I actually did get a bloody nose. Nah, I'm just kidding. What I really did was I said out loud, I have to go to the bathroom too. And then I left. I didn't really have to go to the bathroom. I didn't want to see another exposed butt anyway, so I just waited outside awkwardly for a long time. I got an A in that class, by the way, if you were wondering. I still don't use anything I learned in that class. Draw a picture right now. All right, you done? That sucks, right? I spent 2 hours on the face, I couldn't get the hands right, and when I compared my art to this other artist I found online who's younger than me, it makes me want to curb stomp this monstrosity so no one ever has to look at it again. Okay, now, think of a joke. Not one you've already heard before. I want you to think up a brand new, never been done before joke. Okay. You know how cats are, like, lazy? Maybe we could do a joke about a lazy cat and his owner is like, "Duh, stop being so lazy." That sucked too! Now imagine doing both of those things together.
and then putting that artwork up for the entire world to leave their unfiltered, anonymous opinions. And on top of that, you also make virtually no money off of it. Who in their right mind would put themselves through that kind of torture? Well, dear viewer, I would like you all to meet Zachary. Zachary is a webcomic artist. He makes webcomics just so when you're scrolling through your timeline while taking your morning poo, you get a little chuckle to yourself. And then you keep on scrolling, forgetting about his existence entirely in mere seconds. I have a soft spot for funny webcomics. Not the super serious superhero ones or the Japanese ones. Wait, why is this part all pixely? Webcomics can be shared on any platform. In fact, a lot of webcomics get reposted without the artist's consent and with their names removed. Which is kind of weird that someone went through the effort of removing a watermark when they could have just, you know, not done anything and left it. I hope you all realize that behind every comic is an artist who just wanted to make you laugh and doodle something that day. I started reading webcomics at a very young age. Back then, we just called them comics. They were really the only books that I liked to read, and the only place you could read the hottest new comics was in the newspaper. Oh, sorry, I should clarify. A newspaper is a stack of gray paper that would be delivered to your house by a child riding a bike, and they would print 19 pages of useless information and have one page dedicated to the funnies. This is where the classics were born. You know the ones. The Calvin and Hobbes. The Garfields. The Far Sides. Some of these comics have made me laugh harder than any meme ever has. I just want to say that Calvin and Hobbes was an extremely creative comic. It was a comic about a rambunctious boy that had a giant predatory animal best friend. I mean, where else have you seen that before? By the way, if you ever see those Calvin peeing bumper stickers, those are unlicensed knockoffs and really go against everything Calvin and his creator, Bill Watterson, stood for. In fact, all Calvin and Hobbes merchandise is unlicensed because Bill Watterson never made merchandise. But I mean, aren't these crochet Hobbes dolls the coolest? So there was only enough space in the paper for about 20 comics, and last time I counted, there were way more than 20 comic creators. So if you wanted to get your silly little comic in the newspaper, you had some fierce competition. But now, anyone with a computer and enough dedication can create comics that get shared by millions of people. You don't even need a fancy drawing tablet or expensive painting software or even art skills in general. Webcomics and the internet and memes have been intertwined for decades. Many of your favorite meme formats are just edited webcomics. Now, in most cases, if someone took an artist's work, defaced it, and then re-uploaded it without credit, that'd be a bad thing. But memes are different, I guess. The reason I'm bringing this up is because I want you all to know that these artists have made other comics that are just as funny, and you should support their work and buy their books, and if you're going to make a webcomic edit, please just keep in the watermark. It's literally more work to take it out, and you're being an asshole. Some of you original gangsters may remember that I also used to be a webcomic artist. I posted my first webcomic in 2012, which was over 10 years. 10 years?! It's been that long? What the fuck? I'll be honest, my webcomics took a little while to get some traction. Let me explain something. All the comics I would read in the newspaper had distinguished characters with personalities. A lot of times, the punchline of a newspaper comic would only be funny because we knew the characters and their mannerisms. Garfield hates Mondays, so instead of him hating Friday the 13th, he hates Monday the 13th. That's a good one, Garfield. So I try to make a webcomic like that with my own little universe. I'm gonna be a little vulnerable for a minute. Let's talk about my OCs I made when I was a 16-year-old boy. There were three main brothers. Jake, who was a self-insert character. One time I dressed up as him for Halloween. Justin, the book-smart straight man. Straight man as in the character archetype, not the sexuality. Although if any of the brothers were gay, Justin would be the gay one. And Kevin, the laid-back older brother who did whatever he wanted because he's the oldest. Those three were the main boys. Jake, Justin, and Kevin. The three whitest names anyone's ever heard. Now, if you're an up-and-coming comedy webcomic artist, I would suggest not to do what I did. If you're just trying to make someone laugh, you don't need a whole cast of characters that have intricate relationships. Just tell your joke and leave. Or don't. It's your art. You can do whatever you want.
Eventually, I wanted to rebrand myself. Instead of having distinguished, defined characters, I went with a very basic-looking character design that had absolutely no distinguishing features at all. And I settled on a design that looked like this. I mean, over time, I refined it. I originally posted my comics exclusively to Tumblr. It was just me and this other obscure webcomic about trolls. We were the two main ones, really. Now, if you're still an up-and-coming webcomic artist, then you should post your comics to every platform imaginable. I learned the importance of cross-platform promotion the not-so-easy way. One day, I got a Tumblr message from someone asking if they could post my comics to a small, unknown app called iFunny. And I said, sure. Then that guy would periodically send me messages like, dude, we are blowing up! Our comics keep getting featured! And I was like, our? Then I wake up to messages asking, hey, are you the one posting these to iFunny? And I said, no, but I gave the other guy permission to. You know he's impersonating you and starting beef with other artists, right? Hmm? It turned out that iFunny was my most popular social media account, and I didn't even have access to it. I eventually got the account back, and now people tell me that they loved reading my comics on iFunny back in the day, which wasn't even part of the plan originally. Webcomics have really impacted me and this channel. Some of my earliest online friends were other webcomic artists who I don't keep in touch with as much as I should. My bad, guys, I'm sorry. My username is based off my webcomic, my character design was made for my webcomic, and even my cannonball profile picture is from a panel in my webcomic. I really hope this video makes you appreciate the webcomics that you see on your timeline. I know you see them, they're everywhere. If you come across a comic you like, I want you to try and find the original artist's socials and browse their other comics they've created. I guarantee you'll find some banger comics that just didn't get the same amount of attention as the other ones. And who knows, you might just make a difference in someone's art career. You know, making a whole video about webcomics has made me miss my first love. A lot of times when I think of a joke, I have to wait 2 months to tell it. And at that point, I don't even know if it's funny anymore. But a webcomic can have same-day joke delivery. So this is how I'm officially announcing that I'm making webcomics again. I'll be posting them on my website and maybe Twitter if I'm still verified. There's already 6 brand new comics. Feel free to make any meme edits of them. I don't care. Also, be sure to check out this amazing reversible toasty plush. It's honestly my favorite thing. And up until April 10th, we're running Merch Madness, where you can possibly score a free VidCon ticket and meet up with me. You don't even need to buy anything to enter, so check out the description for more information. I'm super excited to be making comics again. It's how I started out my internet journey. I'm going to try and post at least 1 comic a week, so be on the lookout for those. Thank you all for watching and sticking through this end card. Y'all are the real ones. Hey man, have you ever noticed that we wear the exact same clothes every day? We don't wear any clothes. What if we're both just a cartoon character, and that's why our clothing's the same? That's impossible. Cartoon characters' mouths move. We just open our mouths and words start coming out. Hey, guys, did you see my brand new Rolex? Are you jealous? Doesn't your phone tell the time? Maybe he never noticed that his phone has a clock in it. No one buys a Rolex to tell the time. I can't even read this. People buy Rolexes to indirectly tell everyone how much money we can throw away on useless objects. Hey, look what my watch can do. Ring, ring. Hello? You'll never believe what Brian just bought. What'd he buy? A watch. Really? What a nerd. Oh, Brian. I'm the kind of person who doesn't really care about my outward appearance. A lot of times in high school, we talk about having a healthy self-image of ourselves, and teachers would say stuff like, don't listen to the people who call you ugly. You're beautiful. And all I could think was, there's people saying I'm ugly? For the most part, I haven't really tried to even learn anything about fashion. Most of the time when I get dressed in the morning, I wear just whatever's the cleanest. Like, I don't even know my pant size because I wear basketball shorts all the time. I think I'm a medium. My parents taught me the value of hard work by making me pay for all my clothes, and I am 100% on board with that parenting technique. I think even the super, super rich parents should still make their kids buy their own clothes. Because if you just buy your child anything they want, then they're going to turn into a-holes who just expect everything without having to work hard. Those are the types of kids who grow up to flex all their money on people and who leave their basketball cards all over the cramped dorm. And also, buying your own clothes makes you think harder about what you're going to spend your precious dollars on. You don't want to waste your money, so you have to pick clothes you really like. Except, my mom told me I couldn't buy anything with skulls on them. She said they were too edgy. And you know what? Fair enough, Mom. Looking back, I'm glad I skipped that emo edgy phase. But why didn't you let me express my true self, Mom?
Thank you for not letting me do that.
In the 7th grade, I went through an I need to look cool phase. And one time, I saved up quite a bit of money, so me and my mom went on a shopping spree at Kohl's. Hashtag not sponsored. I was going to impress everyone. I was going to look so cool with my brand new 2 pairs of jeans. I'll get this normal blue pair, and then the exact same pair, just in case I spill ketchup on the first pair. That's another reason why I'm pro have your kids pay for their own clothes. So that way they learn how expensive clothes shopping is. Seriously, 2 pairs of jeans was $70. Do you know how many Pokemon cards I could have bought? Probably enough to make my own pair of PokePants. And that's when I learned about the magical land of Goodwill. At Goodwill, you could buy mediocre, questionably stained-looking jeans for a fourth of the price of Kohl's. And since I had to buy all my clothes, and I was unemployed, I was at Goodwill every other Saturday for that half-off deal. You're at Goodwill, and everything's half-off. That's like a double sale, people. Here's the thing. Typically, clothes stores have a certain style they specialize in. Tilly's, you know you're gonna get that hip LA-style clothes. At Old Navy, you know you're gonna get that white boy Ohio look. And H&M, you know you're gonna get demonetized. But when you step inside your local Goodwill, you don't know what you're getting. You get every style of clothing all in one place. I got my favorite t-shirt from Goodwill. I even wore it to this panel at VidCon.
You know, the panel where I didn't even talk into the microphone, so you couldn't hear half the words I said.
Ah, but James, I don't want to wear clothes that have already been worn by other people. They are gross. Ugh, cuties and herpes.
Ugh. Yeah, no, that's true, that's true. You don't know who else has worn your clothing. But then again, you could be wearing something that was also worn by the odd ones out.
Yeah, that's right. I donate my clothes to Goodwill. Reduce, reuse, recycle, baby.
Why would someone make a pair of pants out of Pokemon cards and give it away? I'm not saying don't buy expensive clothing. Buy whatever you want to buy and can't afford. If there's 2 shirts, one is $40 and one is $5, and you really, really like the $40 shirt and hate the $5 one, you should get the $40 shirt because you'll end up wearing it more often, so you get more use out of it. In economics, there's a term used to measure how much happiness a product will give you, and it's called utils. Sometimes buying more expensive things will give you more utils of happiness, so it's worth it to buy expensive clothing. But for me, I get way more utils buying a shirt for $5. You cannot put a price on all the oodles and oodles of utils I get for wearing a shirt I like for $5. You can wear your Supremes and your Abercrombos or whatever all you want. I just don't think it makes a lot of sense spending that much money on a white t-shirt with an ironed-on logo. There's no material in that shirt that makes it as expensive as it is. Oh, never mind. What you're really doing is paying for the name brand. So you might as well staple 2 $20 bills to your shirt and write in Sharpie, "Look everyone, I got $40. But again, if you like the design of a white shirt and a red rectangle, then you be happy wearing it. I'm not telling you what to wear. But I will tell you this. Don't judge someone based on their clothing. That's like the most shallow thing a person can do. Even if someone is wearing old hand-me-downs or a really expensive name brand t-shirt, don't treat people differently because of their clothing. There's a certain YouTuber going around, I'm not going to say any names, but I will draw pictures, who's teaching kids that their value as a person is correlated to the amount of money they spend on clothing. Don't do that. Okay, real talk over now. School uniforms! People who support school uniforms say that uniforms are better because then the students don't have to think about what they're going to wear the next day because everyone has to wear the same outfit. But like, I already don't think about what I'm wearing. That's probably why I'm naked right now. Okay, that's not entirely true. I'm not just going to walk outside wearing a pink poncho. I have standards. I just buy all the cheap clothing I think looks nice. In high school, I mostly wore solid color V-neck t-shirts, and one time a kid on the very last day of school told me, "James, you always wear solid color V-neck t-shirts. You're like a cartoon character."
That's what I'm going for. I've always wanted to be a cartoon. I don't think you realize how much I love cartoons.
One time I bought those shoes with the really fat tongues. I thought they looked cool, but they certainly didn't feel cool. They didn't have any support for my sole. I couldn't go running in them, so what was even the point? And apparently you're not supposed to tie the laces of those shoes. I'm not sure. Someone just told me, hey man, you know you're not supposed to tie the laces of those shoes, right? So I had to bury the laces inside my shoe, and I was constantly stepping on the sharp aglets. And all the cool kids saw my shoes and said, hey James, those are some pretty fat tongues you got there. You want to come sit at our lunch table? And I said, no, being cool sucks! So now I wear tennis shoes everywhere. Some of you watching are in 7th or 8th grade right now, and you might be going through your own I need to look cool phase. And I just want to say to you little youngins, you don't need to impress or prove yourself to anyone. Wear whatever makes you happy, and that you can afford. And you still have to follow the school's dress code, which is the whole other can of worms. I'm not encouraging anyone to break the rules, okay? All I'm saying is, at the end of the day, what really matters is that you're in 7th grade. Nothing you do will make you cool. I'm sorry. Everyone regrets 7th grade, okay? Just start putting on deodorant, do the homework, you'll get through this.
This brick is alive. Not convinced? Well, what if I did this?
I'm gonna do a backflip!
That's gonna look so cool, Brickathy!
What are you boys doing?
Are you convinced now? Did the brick feel more alive? I mean, sure, it's still a brick that can't move on its own, but maybe because I put googly eyes on it and gave it a family, you can connect with this brick, and it made you feel emotions. Convincing you that something inanimate is animate is the main goal of the animate or. They're nothing more than deranged frauds. For the last century, animators have innovated new techniques and styles to this medium, taking it from a spinning wheel that doesn't even use electricity to Spider-Verse. And today, I'm going to talk about all the processes and innovations that have brought the medium of animation to right now. But first, let's go all the way back to the beginning of film, when it was all black and white and people had to put up text whenever they talked. Early on, filmmakers discovered a very simple trick to make anything appear alive in front of a camera. And that simple trick was called... You're filming something, and then stop the camera, and then move the thing slightly, capture a new image, move the thing again, and continue to do that a tedious amount of times. On the film, that thing now magically looked like it move on its own. And with this technique, you could make literally anything appear to be moving. Anything. But some filmmakers took this art form to an extreme level and created whole characters out of clay and a posable metal wire system called an armature. Now, animators can sculpt unique characters that bend and pose in much more believable ways. With stop motion, you don't need to hire a real dinosaur or giant monkey to make a movie about a dinosaur or giant monkey. I'm sorry you didn't get the job, Phil. You know, I just had a crazy idea. What if we made our entire puppet's head interchangeable? Now they can make any facial expression and mouth shape possible. We will have to sculpt out hundreds of different heads, though, but, I mean, come on, that'll be fun. That's why we're extreme, baby! Stop-motion movies are still being made and enjoyed to this day. And while new technology does help make the overall process easier, animators are still using the same techniques that were used on King Kong back in the 1920s, where they carefully pose out a character's every movement, frame by frame. In order. Stop motion is a medium that I can't even begin to understand how they do, let alone make it look good, you know? Having a stop motion character in gravity-defying poses, making hundreds of different faces, is done solely to make the character feel more alive. And sometimes, to help sell the realism, animators will mimic quirks that only happen in live-action films. I always chuckle when I see a lens flare in an animated movie, because, like, where did you come from? There's not even a camera lens. Unlike me, though, who's always got a camera rolling. Hey, how's it going? Uh-oh. Oh, no! Did you catch that? Did you see the lizard eating a bug? Ooh, we got him. Now let's rewind the clip and pause right here. This lizard moves so fast that the camera can't even capture its movements correctly, and he transmogrifies into an amorphic blob that barely even resembles a lizard. But do not fret, dear viewer. This is called motion blur, and it's absolutely natural. Fast-moving objects are hard to see in real life anyway, so this blurry blob only showing up for one frame actually helps sell the idea that this little guy is moving quickly. If you watch any movie frame by frame, you'll find motion blur everywhere, and you won't even notice. So how do animators who are taking hundreds of still photos handle this naturally occurring phenomenon with things in motion? Easy, they'll draw smear. Animators draw their own blurry blob frame to mimic fast movements. Bodies can stretch, arms can multiply. Basically, we can sneak in nightmares as long as it's only shown for one frame. Smears, while being very fun to draw, can look very weird and goofy on their own. But in the context of the whole shot, you barely even notice they're there. Okay, maybe now you'll notice them, but that's only because I pointed them out. And since animators are bad boys and don't play by the rules, they can make smears out of anything, even in stop motion. We can sculpt a physical smear frame like how they did in Laika's Paranorman, which, if you haven't seen, is going to be your new favorite movie. Smear frames can be used anytime, anywhere. Unless you were an animator in the 1920s and 30s and you didn't know about them back then. In that case, you would have been animating something called... In the 1920s and 30s, animators were still figuring out some core principles of animation. Turns out there's 12 of them. Smear frames were used sparingly during this time, with animators usually only drawing characters with multiple limbs to show fast movements. The stretchy, wacky, and spiritually ascending smears that you all know and love weren't really used until the 1940s. Rubber hose characters have noodly, almost hose-like limbs that bend in all sorts of anatomically defying ways. Look at Mickey Mouse's noodle arms that I can now legally show you. The reason characters look like this is because drawing noodle arms and not worrying about anatomy is easier to draw. But like, just because something has noodle arms doesn't mean it's bad, you guys. What these animators were able to accomplish with the technology, if you could even call it that, is nothing short of dark magic. And the very same studio that made Steamboat Willie wanted to push the envelope and show the world that animation could be more. It doesn't just have to be noodly characters with Pac-Man eyes. They were going to animate a realistic woman with proportional arms that don't move in weird, exaggerated ways. And oh god, her noodle arms are moving in weird, exaggerated ways. In 1934, Disney released a short called The Goddess of Spring, being their first attempt at animating a character with what was supposed to have real human anatomy. They still had a lot to learn, obviously. Now, animating a quote-unquote anatomically correct human is actually a much harder task than you might realize, and that's because of the uncanny valley. Get more and more human characteristics, we hit an interesting point right here when something looks almost like a human, but is just a little off. Our pattern recognition brains start setting off alarm bells and go, ugh, something is definitely wrong with that almost human. I am entering fight or flight right now. So if you're trying to make something look as close to a human as possible, but are just a tiny bit off, everything crumbles. The Goddess of Spring was still good practice for Disney because only 3 years later, they released the world's first fully animated feature film, Snow White. Can you really blame Disney for going 6 times over budget to make this movie? I mean, just look at how these human characters are moving. 10 years before Snow White, animated humans looked like this. So going from this to this in only 10 years? How? I can't get over how real these human characters look sometimes. Almost too real. Well, I think you're old enough to learn about the dangers of rotoscoping is the process of taking real-life footage and then manually tracing over every frame, resulting in an animation with unreal levels of realism. And I say unreal derogatorily. You're basically slapping a cartoon filter over live-action footage, but instead of simply slapping, you're spending multiple hours doing mindless and tedious drawing. Rotoscoping is not the same as filming a human actor and then later referencing that footage, like what Disney did for Sleeping Beauty or Alice in Wonderland or any movie ever, because animators use references all the time. People had figured out how to rotoscope other people long before Snow White. So of course Disney, who was trying to convey real human movement, rotoscoped some shots. The problem with rotoscoping is that we start to sneak our way back to the bottom of the uncanny valley. Animated characters often do and should break the laws of physics. They can squash and stretch into weird proportions and be drawn in unique and interesting poses. And look, Snow White is still a masterpiece of a movie. The rotoscoping is fine, you barely notice it. It's good, it's a good movie, and it made Disney a lot of money. Also, how did Walt animate these shots of things reflecting in the water in 1937? What, did they put special glass over paintings to make it look distorted or something? Who would be crazy enough to do that? If you made a whole movie entirely rotoscoped, what you end up with is Ralph Bakshi's The Lord of the Rings. Notice anything off about these characters' movements? Look at how Gandalf moved just a year ago in The Hobbit. Now, Lord of the Rings. Hobbit. Lord of the Rings. Almost every shot in this movie was rotoscoped, and the shots that weren't used live-action footage with a filter over it. I'm not saying that rotoscoping is bad. You just have to use it correctly. A character switching from traditionally animated to rotoscoped is incredibly funny, and always will be. The YouTuber Joel Havier makes very entertaining rotoscope skits that feel like a fever dream, and I mean that underogatorily. And a lot of music videos get away with rotoscoping because, admittedly, rotoscoping is a very cool visual. Now, I wish I could say the first Lord of the Rings movie was a hidden animation gem, but I don't know, it's not on my top 10, I'm sorry. It probably made a lot of nerds in the 70s happy, but thankfully The Lord of the Rings has been adapted into many other forms of media, like video games, Magic the Gathering cards, and anime.
Anime?
They're making a Lord of the Rings anime?
They're making a Lord of the Rings...
You thought Hollywood, California was the only place in the world making moving pictures? Japan's been making their own moving pictures too, and some of them are moving drawings. There are entire college courses on the history of anime, but you're not paying me tuition, so we're gonna have to skip over a couple things. A lot of early anime is now lost media because cinemas didn't preserve film back then, and an earthquake destroyed many studios in 1923. Some Japanese animators created shorts out of paper cutouts because buying thousands of celluloid sheets was too expensive, and they had some very unique character designs. And some Japanese animators took inspiration from Disney and made shorts that looked very similar to America's rubber hose characters. Then, by the 1940s, some major world events happened that got most of the world involved, and both American and Japanese animation studios were affected. But after all that, in 1948, one studio called Japan Animated Films, later bought out by Toei Animation, set out to be the Disney of the East, and they made cartoons about magical schoolgirls, and are still in business to this day and made some other less popular shows. One animator who quit working at Toei created his own company and made an anime based off his comic about a robot boy. Hey, I kind of like that art style of drawing humans with big expressive eyes. Let's do more of that. That same year, another studio made an anime about humans controlling giant robots. I wonder if that's going to inspire a whole new genre. And this guy was commissioned by American studios to make stop-motion Christmas movies like Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer. Meaning Rudolph is anime.
Nani?
By the 1960s, Japanese shows started airing on televisions all across the globe, and they continued to make unique and interesting stories with amazing animations that were beloved by billions of people and grew into extremely profitable franchises. Like, I'm talking the most profitable franchise. By the 1970s, Disney was still very much the animated movie gold standard, making big-budgeted movies with family-friendly values. Which is fine to do, kids love bright colors and talking animals that only cartoons can offer, but some studios realized that animation was a medium, not a genre, and made animated movies exclusively for adults. That's part of the reason why the first Lord of the Rings movie was entirely rotoscoped. It wasn't trying to be cartoony and over the top, it was trying to be real and gritty. animation could be anything for anyone of any age. But really, if you think about it, there hadn't been a new way of showing people moving drawings since those very early days of black and white stop motion. In stop motion, you take a picture, move a figure, take a picture, move a figure. In cell animation, you take a picture, move a cell, take a picture, move a cell. Everything's just been a series of pictures moved manually in front of a camera this whole time? Always has been.
You've got mail.
Oh. It says the entire animation and film industry is about to be flipped onto its head forever and ever. Yeah, right. I'm sure this whole computer thing is just... ever-increasing advancements of technology, we were able to achieve increasingly advanced achievements, like putting a guy on the moon and drawing silly little cartoons more efficiently. Gone are the days of having to physically draw everything out on paper and underpay a team of hundreds of pretty girls to hand-paint every frame. Now we can use this fancy new computer to render everything out for us. All we have to do is create a real-life mold of our real-life human hand, then draw 350 triangles onto that hand, then manually measure out the X, Y, and Z coordinates of 800 different data points. No, come on, this is gonna be so much faster. Put that pencil down. Now we just program in a couple of keyframes and we get... Huh. We still don't have the processing power to render everything out. Oh, I know! We'll just point this long exposure camera at the computer screen. Get these art supplies out of here. This is the future. And when everything's finished rendering, we'll get this! A whole human hand moving on its own without having to draw a single frame. This process is exactly what Utah University student Ed Catmull did in 1972. And while it might not have been more efficient than drawing everything out by hand, it showed that computers were capable of rendering out three-dimensional animations. This was made after we landed a man on the moon, by the way, so don't tell me this was CGI. As the computer's processing power grew exponentially, more and more filmmakers started seeing the benefits of using computer-generated images in movies. A decade after Catmull digitized his hand, films like Tron showcased characters racing on mind-boggling computer-generated light cycles. This might look, you know, bad by today's standards, but these graphics were something that audiences had never seen before. Plus, the movie takes place inside of a computer, so this is probably what people thought the insides of a computer looked like anyways. At the time, computers did a great job at creating rigid, geometric shapes, and animators used that to their advantage. Characters would still have to be animated traditionally on cells, but objects that weren't going to change shape, like black cauldrons, could now magically fly in circles around our characters. Disney really showed off the computer's rendering power during the climax of The Great Mouse Detective, when these two rodents fought each other inside a clock tower and all the spinning gears were generated by a computer. Animators can now make any complex shape move in a three-dimensional space without having to draw a single frame. I mean, you know, except for the characters, they still very much had to draw those. Computer graphics were here to stay as Disney integrated more of them into movies like these cars in Oliver and Company or Eric's ship in The Little Mermaid, and then they stopped using cells entirely. Starting with The Rescuers Down Under, Disney no longer used cells and made movies entirely digitally with a program called CAPS. So if you ever wanted to own a cell of Joanna the Lizard eating an egg, that's too bad because they don't exist, which fucking sucks because Joanna was the best goddamn lizard Disney ever made. Don't touch me! TV shows and anime still use cells till about the year 2000-ish, but eventually everyone switched to digital. Now to color a frame, all you had to do was... So computers were great at making rigid, non-flexible shapes, but has anyone ever tried to make... A group of computer scientists who were working for a small indie director named George Lucas were taking this art form to an extreme level and created whole characters completely generated by a computer. Then a small entrepreneur named Steve Jobs hired those computer scientists and made his own company, Pixar. Yes, Steve Jobs was one of the founders of Pixar, and he originally created the company to sell a high-end computer powerful enough to render 3D animations, but no one bought the computer because it cost $135,000. So the team scrapped the computer selling idea and just stuck with making computer-generated cartoons, but they soon discovered a unique problem.
The computer had a hard time getting textures right, and everything, including babies, ended up looking like it was made out of plastic. So the team's clever workaround this dilemma was to make a movie with the entire cast of characters actually made out of plastic. Or ants. You know, people don't know what ants are supposed to look like. It's fine. Pixar continued to develop new processes to get the computer to generate unique textures and lighting, like simulating human hair or fur, or lighting things in such a way to make everything appear underwater. No other studio was pioneering computer-generated images like Pixar was. And then in 2006, Disney bought Pixar. But I don't think Steve was too upset because 1 year later, he achieved his dream of selling a high-end computer. This time being a little more affordable. A little. Now, I want to squash any misconception that computers do all the animating. Animators still have to manually pose a character's body and facial expression off of a character's build a complex system of nodes and bones that let them manually pose a character into any position possible. It's kind of like a digital stop-motion puppet, or an actual puppet without any of the strings. All CG characters are just their own complicated version of Pinocchio. Using character rigs is really the only way of animating things in three dimensions. But it's not like we can use rigs in 2D animation. Here in the second dimension, we don't have a fancy Z-axis. 2D animation can only be done by hand-drawing 24 new images every second. Except we don't, I lied. Even all the way back when characters were animated with paper and cells, animators wouldn't draw a whole new frame every frame. Usually, they would animate pieces of a character and paint each piece on its own cell. You remember Robin? They only drew one body and five different heads. But because cells are a physical object that get harder to handle the more you have, animators could only break a character up into two or three different pieces. But now, thanks to the computer, we can break up a character into as many pieces as we'd like. Like four, or five, or 173! Have you ever played around with the free and revolutionary animation software Pivot Stick Figure Animator? If you're the type of person that says, "Oh, I suck at drawing. I can't even draw stick figures," then you're gonna love this program. On Pivot, you're given a pre-made stick figure or horse that have these joints that can be posed however you like. Each of these stick figure's limbs are just individual pieces that are connected in such a way that make it look like a stick figure. So to make these animations, we're not really drawing anything, we're just manually posing out a character like a digital puppeteer. I wasn't saying you can make a rig out of 173 pieces just to be funny. Because that's how many pieces I'm made out of. That's right, me! Even I'm a rig! And can I tell you a secret? Most TV shows use rigs too. Of course, hand-drawn traditional animation is still used to make these shows. It's not a lost art form or anything. But rigs are super useful at making still pretty high-quality levels of animation, but at a much cheaper cost. And as we all know, TV animation has to create more animation per budget. But maybe rig animation still isn't as cost-effective as you'd like. And maybe you're not a fan of the complicated puppet look, and you want something that looks more human. Well, there's one more animation process we can try, called motion. An actor inside one of these dorky ping-pong suits, a computer can pinpoint and record that actor's exact movements. Now we can take those movements, slap a cartoon character's model over it, and we get an animation that looks like shit. Motion capture is the rotoscoping of 3D animation. It cuts costs, but the results are too human, and we're back at the bottom of the uncanny valley. That's why the kids from the Polar Express look so nightmarish, because they are following the exact movements of Tom Hanks. Yes, Tom Hanks, the adult man, did some motion capture for the small, nameless hero boy from the Polar Express. There's probably a reason we haven't made a fully motion capture cartoon in over 10 years. Because it looks weird. But I mean, that didn't stop one of these movies from winning an Oscar in animation. And before you ask, no, it wasn't Monster House or Tintin. It was Mars Needs Moms, duh. Just like rotoscoping, motion capture can be used correctly. Computer-generated characters acting side-by-side real human actors look decent. It's not that jarring that these creatures who exist in a live-action world are moving just like live-action people. And let's not forget all the VTubers who use motion capture technology to bring their jiggly assets to life. No matter what method someone uses to try and convince you that something else is alive,
I think is incredibly cool, and I hope you think it's cool too. But maybe you don't think it's cool, and you don't care about animation, and you just put this video on in the background while you were cleaning. That's totally fine, I do that all the time. I just like learning about how all my favorite animated pieces of media get created, because it's not always the same process. And I think it's great that new technology is allowing anyone to express themselves in whatever way possible. A person expressing themselves. Those are the three key words here. From the big studios that are just now pioneering new and interesting styles with digital animation, to the indie studios that have access to incredible technology which allow anyone working from their bedrooms in their pajamas to create some truly masterpieces of animation. So, if you're the type of person that likes to trick people into thinking that something is alive, then you deserve all the respect in the world. In fact, here are some cool people that made the animation in this video possible. Hello, you just made it to the end of this video. I hope you enjoyed it. I'm still trying to figure out this VTuber model, so I'm over-enunciating my words. The technology behind this is beyond my comprehension. If you're still deciding what to get for the holidays, then great news. We have mystery boxes over on my website, so you can leave the deciding up to us. Now, if you'll excuse me, I'm gonna go take a nap. Are you still watching? Oh yeah, she's coming back.
Recently, I read the worst YouTube comment ever, and I can't stop thinking about it. This comment lives in my head completely rent-free. It lives in its own private penthouse. The comment was concerning my upload schedule, and it was, "If anime studios can make an episode of anime in 1 week, then these YouTubers can make a video in a month." Initially, I reacted like, "You think that's how this works? You think anime studios post an episode and go, 'Great work, team! Well, time to make the next episode this week. Hope none of you have any plans!'" I know the working conditions in Japan are bad, but sheesh! I guess all the animators are just slacking off between seasons then, huh? And as I thought about it more, I realized, I can't get too mad. This person is just uneducated about the animation industry and is probably a minor. And then I thought, hey, I know a bit about animation behind the scenes. Maybe I could talk about being an artist and educate people on the animation pipeline. So that way, I won't get any more uneducated comments. For this video, when I say artist, I'm going to be talking about the Google definition of an artist. Noun, a person who produces paintings or drawings as a profession or hobby. You know, the pen and paper artists. I'm not really going to be talking about artists who make music or birthday cakes or take black and white photos of sunsets because I want to talk about cartoons. I make cartoons. Now, it should come to no surprise that I'm pro-artist. Well, not a pro-artist. Are you kidding? I know my skill level. I still can't draw fingers. What I'm saying is I will support anyone who wants to make art. If you're making art as a hobby, then that's a really great creative outlet, and having something physical as an end result is incredibly rewarding. But if you want to turn making art into a full-time job, you might want to sit down and consider a few things. Like, are you sure you don't want to go to law school? The biggest challenge all artists face is they have to eat food to survive. And in this capitalist society, food costs money. So artists are challenged to somehow take being good at making shapes and turn that into money. I know of 4 ways an artist can make a living. The first way is to be so good at art that people will pay money to hang it up in their house. The second option is to make caricature drawings at beaches and tourist traps. The third option is to sell your plasma. And the fourth option, which is the most common option, is to make drawings that people will pay you to make. And do a little bit of option 3 on the side. Some artists will take commissions, which is basically an artist going, "Hey, I'll draw whatever you want, asterisk, for $100. And people will go, "What the f-? Art should be free! I was gonna give you so much exposure to my 50 Twitter followers!" Or people will go, "I want you to draw this cute animal character I made, and while at first your price might seem a bit high to the uneducated, I understand that art is a time-consuming process and you need to eat too. So here's a crisp 100. But another somewhat more stable idea is that artists will get jobs at studios or work for a YouTuber and will be like, "Hey, we'll give you money if you draw specifically what we want, and if we don't like your art, we'll make sure to communicate clearly what we would like changed and work as a team to do the best we can." or you're fired!
And that leads us into animation. An important thing to remember for animation is that drawings equal time plus money.
Exactly how much time? Well, to answer that one commenter's question, no, an anime studio does not make an episode of anime in 1 week. I think. South Park is what making an episode in a week looks like. And truthfully, that's very impressive. I take months trying to figure out what the heck I'm even going to talk about.
Making a single episode of a cartoon from scratch takes about 2 years.
Don't believe me? Well, let's see what Yakko from the 2020 Animaniacs has to say in the very first episode.
At least, we still think there's a President Trump. You see, the writers are writing this in 2018.
Now that doesn't mean it took 26 years to make the first season of the Animaniacs. There's a lot of moving parts that happen when producing an animated TV series. For starters, the whole season of the show gets made at the same time.
While the writers are writing episode 12, the storyboard team is boarding episode 3, and the design team is designing the bowling shoes that are going to be worn in episode 6.
And it's someone's entire job to make sure that everyone's doing their job.
This is called the animation pipeline.
And there's so many other departments that I could honestly make a whole other video about this pipeline.
If you're interested, I'll do it. But just know that it takes roughly 2 years to make a season of a cartoon show. And that's why when shows reference memes, they're extremely outdated.
You know, like a boss!
It's beautiful, isn't it? This exterior nighttime city skyline background.
This background was drawn by one of my background artists, Annie Loomis, and it took 7 hours to make. And it was used specifically for this clip.
If it wasn't for the Cats movie, I would have thought Hollywood knew what they were doing too.
It lasted for 4 seconds. 7 hours of work, 4 seconds of content.
So before we continue, I'm going to make you all sit and appreciate this background for another 4 seconds so I can double the value of this background.
Backgrounds can be a time-consuming process, and the whole purpose of them is to be in the back of the ground. They're not even the focus.
So storyboarders will sketch out a scene to set the staging through layout, posing, and character expression. And during this phase, I'm trying to find places where I can reuse backgrounds or take pieces of other backgrounds and Frankenstein monster them together to make an entirely new background. Like how I used the city background to be outside this window. Or how I took the buildings from this background, the bushes from this background, and the bench from this background and made an entirely new background. And hopefully, none of you noticed.
Am I being cheap? Or cutting corners?
Absolutely, but that's the point. That gives another background artist more time to make something else, like this James-themed city skyline. Instead of having to draw 20 different backgrounds of a bedroom, we already have a bedroom, let's just do something else, please!
It's not being lazy, it's getting the most use, the most mileage out of your hard work.
I see this next story pop up on Twitter about every month, and it makes me want to stab my eyes out.
If you look at this scene from The Jungle Book and this scene from Winnie the Pooh, these two similarly proportioned boys are eerily moving in the exact same way.
Wait, was this plagiarized? Did someone from Winnie the Pooh plagiarize The Jungle Book?
No. Remember what I said about drawings equal time plus money? Well, back in the old days of animation, before fancy graphics cards and floppy disks, animation frames had to be physically painted onto floppy, transparent sheets called cells. So animated movies were essentially a really long flipbook with over 100,000 hand-drawn painted pages. Back then, drawings equaled even more time and even more money. This whole sequence had to not only be drawn 24 times a second, but it also had to have the correct timing to look like a little boy was jumping on rocks. Just because you drew 24 Mowglis doesn't mean they're gonna look good when you play the frames together.
So if you're making a cartoon movie in the 70s and you need a scene where a young boy character is just being a dude and throwing rocks, and you need a really climactic fight scene, are you gonna spend the time and money drawing another boy throwing another rock when someone else already did that 10 years ago? Or are you going to reuse the animation the studio already made and then have more time and budget to make an even epicker fight scene?
If these movies were from two different studios, then yes, that would be a completely different story.
But Disney owns this movement of our boy Mowgli, so they're allowed to use that movement on our boy Chris.
Turning your art into a full-time job is very difficult. I'm extremely lucky to not only have this opportunity, but to be able to build an amazing team of talented artists to create these cartoons and share them with you. And because of you watching these videos and supporting me, I'm able to reinvest money into the team so we can make better quality content and I can support more artists. It's a win-win symbiotic thing we got going on. So if you ever wanted to get into the art industry, good luck, get drawing, and start putting that portfolio together.
Hey, kids, do you want some candy?
Yeah!
No, kids, never accept candy from strangers. Don't you know candy can cause cavities? Next time a stranger offers you candy, just think about all the cavities you'd get.
This message brought to you by the Dentists of America Association.
You've all heard the phrase, stranger danger, right? Probably a parent slash guardian taught you that you should never trust strangers. And that's really solid advice because you're just a dumb kid who doesn't know what a pedophile is. But all those parents slash guardians grew up without the internet. And, the internet is full of strangers. And I'm one of them. How much do you really know about me?
I'm a math education major. I want to be a math teacher.
Is that I used to have a speech impediment when I was little.
Think it was the Halloween after the bunny?
And that's why I'm a furry.
I, James, was a bedwetter until I was 8 years old.
Okay, granted, you do know quite a few personal details. The internet changes how we talk to people, meaning it's a lot easier to talk to strangers on the internet than in real life, because on the internet, you can find strangers who have the same interests, hobbies, and fetishes as you do. But I find it so hard to talk to new people. I would never have enough confidence to be a door-to-door salesman. There are some jobs where you have to deal with annoying customers, but being a door-to-door salesman, you're the annoying one. I guess I just hate bothering people. I'd be a terrible salesman.
What?
Do you have a water filter?
Yeah.
But I was just thinking that I could use another one.
Oh, then you probably don't need this. I'm sorry for wasting your time.
One time I actually did have to be a door-to-door salesman for a Boy Scout activity. But I wasn't even selling anything. I was just telling people about a canned food drive the Scouts were doing. As a troop, it was our job to go door-to-door and ask people if there was any non-perishable food that they were willing to donate. Being a nervous little kid probably benefited me, because most people were super nice, and a lot of people donated stuff. And even the people who didn't donate were like, oh, sorry, I don't have anything on me.
You don't have any canned foods?
Well, dude, that's perfect. The house next door just gave me some. Here, these are for you. But there were two houses I went to that I still remember to this day. One guy pointed to his no soliciting sign and asked me if I knew what it said. Yeah, I know what soliciting is. I'd always thought that soliciting meant I couldn't sell you something, not that I couldn't ask you for free food. And at the other house, all the guy said was, listen, I'm not interested. And then both houses slammed the door in my face. Some of you are probably thinking, that's it? That was nothing. And yeah, looking back at the situation, I got off pretty easily. People who are a full-time door-to-door salesman probably have to deal with way worse stuff every day. But to a fragile-minded kid who was just doing what his scoutmaster told him to do, those experiences scarred me. Luckily, I'm not a salesman, so I'm usually the person on the other side of the door. I never know what to say to these people. For the longest time, I used to tell them the exact same thing. My mom's not home. But one day, that's not going to work. So for now, I just have to pretend that I'm interested, tell them I'll give them a call, and then put their pamphlet into the pile. My grandma, however, would, treat these door-to-door salesmen very differently. You see, my grandma is known as the nicest person on the planet, so she would invite these salesmen inside, offer them a glass of water, and then show them pictures of her grandkids. I'm not exaggerating. One time I was at my grandma's house just playing some video games, and this person, an adult person I'd never seen before, just started watching me play. Are you one of my cousins? And then my grandma handed him a big cup of water filled with ice and a straw. They talked for a bit. He left, and I asked, Gram, who was that?
Oh, it was someone just trying to sell me a vacuum cleaner.
But salesmen don't have it the hardest on the doorstep. There's also Jehovah Witnesses and Mormon missionaries who are literally trying to save your soul. I can't even get mad at these people because if you had the secret to eternal happiness, wouldn't you be telling everyone in your neighborhood too? They're trying to do good and all, but whenever they show up, hello, do you have time for to be baptized?
Oh, sorry guys, but you're wasting your time. You see, I'm an YouTuber, so I'm not going to heaven.
Here's a story that's a prime example of me failing at talking to people. I had just finished grocery shopping at Walmart, and this isn't important to the story, but Adam from Something Else YT was there.
Hello. Walmart's where I make friends.
I was walking to my car, and I started eating an Uncrustable frozen PB&J sandwich that I bought, and this guy drives up to me and yells, "Man, you're not even waiting to get in the car. You're just eating that thing up."
Yeah, I was hungry.
Then he pulls his car over and says, "All right, listen, fellas. I'm traveling to Buckeye, and I need $8 for gas, but I forgot my wallet at home." And I thought, huh, that's coincidentally how much a pack of cigarettes costs. He offered us his CDs in exchange for $8, but Adam said the smart thing.
Sorry, man, I don't got any cash on me.
And he showed the man his empty wallet. Poor. All I have is a 10.
You stupid mother...
I don't know why I said that. I think I was actually going to pay this man $8 if I had exact change. But here's the thing. I didn't only have a 10. I also had a 20. The guy saw my cash and said, "Man, all you have is a 10. Nah, man, I see you have a 20. And then he raised the price of his CDs from $8 to $30. Like I said, I should have handled the situation differently. If I was going to give him money, I should have given him a 10 and said, "Now give me $2 back." But he had a solid argument. He said, "If there were 20 dudes who all tried to jump you, I'd have your back." Now that's not a bad price for a Walmart parking lot bodyguard. You know, man, you gotta realize that money is just an object. Okay, then why do you want it? He asked us, "Do you boys like rap music?" He does.
Hey, I do. I listen to like Eminem, Kendrick Lamar, and Chance the Rap. Oh no.
And then the man pulled out his CDs, but he didn't have a CD player in his car, so he asked me if I could use my CD player, and I said, sure, but my CD player already had my mixtape in that I never bothered to take out, so when I turned on my CD player... Oh, I got something in my throat. By the way, if you want to listen to my whole mixtape, link in the description. Adam and I started listening to his CDs, and the man started doing this. Yeah, that's the good stuff. So what'll it be, little man? You gonna give me the money or nah, huh? Huh? Do I need to get my gang of 19 other dudes out? Huh? Yeah, I ended up giving the guy my $30. Honestly, I didn't get the meth head drug user vibe from him. He was more of a goofy dad who just needed $30. And after I gave him the money, he thanked us, saying things like, "God bless you," and talked about how much he was going to miss his CD. Now, was I scammed out of $30 and secretly this guy is laughing to himself that he sold a used rap CD to a white boy? Yeah, that definitely could be a possibility, but I hope whoever this guy is, that he pays the good deed forward. And I hope you made it to wherever you need to be. In conclusion, never carry cash on your kids.
One time, me and a group of buddies were driving through Texas, and we passed a building that looked like the Whataburger corporate office. Just to be sure, I checked my phone and discovered, yeah, we did just drive past the Whataburger corporate office. But what I found interesting was that the building had hundreds of one-star reviews. After some investigation, I found that these reviews weren't coming from the Whataburger corporate staff. No, these reviews were from once loyal customers who in one way or another had a negative experience at a Whataburger and were going to take this issue to the top! Reading people's wordy laments about their terrible fast food experiences has become a hobby of mine. And it's not just Whataburger. Every fast food corporate office has hundreds of one-star reviews. These people have been wronged by a billion-dollar company, and the only way they can get back at them is calling them stupid. The team at blah 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 have no intelligence whatsoever. I ordered 3 large lemonades, and all 3 spilled in the inside of my car because the cup holder was way too flimsy. I told the manager named Josh, and all he said he could do was say he's sorry. Sorry isn't going to clean up the mess caused by their stupidity! This guy spilled 3 lemonades all over his car, and instead of going, "Ah, I'm so stupid," he went, "Ah, Josh is stupid!" This just goes to show that you could do your job perfectly and still have angry customers. Also, what did you expect Josh to do? Hey, I just spilled all that lemonade you gave me in that cup holder! Oh my goodness, how could I be so stupid? I forgot to turn off spill mode! Bring your car out back and I'll get a straw and then I'll suck it dry.
No need to thank me. That's what fast food employees are for.
I can't talk about fast food without bringing up a small local sandwich shop in my area.
So here are some of my favorite one-star Suaboy reviews. We went to the location in blah blah blah. We had 30 minutes to close. I know, sucks, but there was a huge regional wrestling match and there were some starving boys. I walked in and let them know we had 20 sandwiches to order. We didn't have crazy expectations. Substituting meat, forget tomatoes if you're out. We don't need toasted, let's just feed these boys. 9 sandwiches in, the sweetest girl who was making our food said her manager said, shut it down, and they're not making the rest of the order. The manager had the employee in tears, and 9 boys didn't get food. I was mind blown. We offered big tips, gave free oil changes to employees working hard to make money. I run a mechanic shop and stay late for customer a lot. We didn't have crazy expectations. We just wanted a whole catering order 30 minutes before close. I know some people are going to be thinking, you're a business that's still open, so you have to do what the customer says. But I want those same people to ask their mother to make them 20 sandwiches at 9:30 p.m. and let me know what she says. And if those 9 boys were still upset, they should have just suplexed the manager into a table and then made the cold cut combo themselves. I placed an order online for 2 footlongs. I walked in to pick up my order, and I was thankful I didn't leave a tip. I received 1 footlong, but ordered 2. It's very clear on the receipt that was attached to the package. I showed it to the woman working behind the counter, and she laughed and said, oh, I didn't see that. Let me get that for you. Not sure why she missed that. Has never happened to me before. Is she on something, or does she not know how to read English? I had to stand there and wait for her to make the other footlong. And then this person continues to write a whole 500-word manifesto. Are they on drugs? Can they read English? Jeez. Do you think this reviewer is going to tell their grandkids about this story? And then I had to stand next to the sneeze guard for 2 minutes. Okay, Grandma, can we go? And they forgot the mayo! There are a whole bunch of lengthy reviews just like this. And for these types of reviews, I, like, start thinking about these people psychologically. I feel like these people either have something else going on or nothing else going on. I'm sorry that your lunch was ruined, but if this is the biggest problem in your life, you're doing all right. And maybe this wouldn't have happened if you left a tip. I went to the location at blah, blah, blah. The guy Frank there needs to take some customer service classes. He is not friendly, and when I told him he should be more friendly to his customers, he told me to go ahead and call whoever I wanted to complain. Frank, I love you. You don't need to take customer service classes. You need to be teaching them. IDK, who was working at around 9:45 on May 17th, but somebody needs to give them a hug. I pull up to the window to pay, and there was 3 girls standing there doing nothing. One of them mumbled my total and stuck out her hand. I gave her my card, and she did her thing. Then she handed me a crumpled mess of a bag and 2 drinks with, like, 0 ice. No have a nice night, no thanks for stopping in, not even a hello. IDK, if all 3 of those girls lives together and somebody ran over their dog or something, but all 3 of them looked like they absolutely hated being there, and me ordering my meal was the biggest inconvenience they could have experienced. I feel so bad for these workers, they need a hug, but also screw them 1 star. I can't believe this McDonald's took my review down, but that's okay, I will recite it. They had no barbecue sauce for their nuggets the whole Memorial Day weekend. For all you barbecue sauce lovers out there, when you went to this location on any of those days and asked for barbecue sauce and you were told they didn't have any more, you must have felt crushed like I did. Like, what was the point of ordering nuggets and finding out they didn't have barbecue sauce afterwards? Why didn't they disclose that fact before ordering the nuggets and paying for it? I'll tell you why. Because they wanted to take advantage of us just to get that sale. What, the employees do take the barbecue sauce to their homes to use for their own Memorial Day weekend barbecues? This is one memorable, unfavorable moment that will be remembered for years to come. You know, there are many who are barbecue sauce lovers out there that went through the same feeling I did when I ordered 3 20-piece nuggets just to find out afterwards they didn't have any barbecue sauce. Like, if you agree. I don't want to jump to any conclusions, but do you think they're out of barbecue sauce because the world's number one barbecue sauce lover keeps ordering there? Going through all the trouble to write a review and then recite the review again, all because they were out of barbecue sauce, seems like a lot, but 60 nuggets with no sauce on a national holiday is a tragedy, I'll give you that. I love that this guy didn't even consider that they were just out of sauce and instead went full conspiracy mode, thinking the employees were hoarding the sauce for their own barbecue. You gotta have barbecue sauce for your barbecue. It's in the name. I'm not going to act like every fast food restaurant is in the right all the time, because I've had my fair share of terrible fast food experiences too. I once ordered a burger from Sonic, and they gave me the burger with no meat. And I went, dang, well, that's how my day is gonna go, I guess. I didn't write a lengthy review to hopefully be seen by someone at corporate. I don't know. I got other problems. If reading these reviews has taught you anything, it's that these fast food workers have to deal with all sorts of customers going through all sorts of problems. So please be the customer who shows a little compassion. They are handling your food after all. Leave a like if you agree. My child works for Whataburger, hasn't been paid since December 2nd. Today is 1-4 and still no paychecks. We've been told lies saying paycheck is coming to the store, then FedEx is delivering it, and still nothing. He's only 18, so I feel like they're trying to get over.